Blog Talk Radio.
In direct the fruits a traverse le plain cest, so that Santorum de patriotism de l'édition Cajon. Tom Roulet, or as us regular folks say, let the good times roll. Good Sunday afternoon to you all, princesses and princes of patriotism. This is Michael B., and it is another Sunday, and as usual, I want to thank you all for taking a little time out of your Sunday afternoon to spend it with me and my partner, Becca L., who has a great show lined up for us today. We've got a great guest with Adam Tickle. And as well, we will have J.C. Hagan coming on here in a little bit with ConservaStats segment. And how'd y'all like today's intro? What a great day it was yesterday in Louisiana. In fact, I want to speak about it. My editorial, which, as I tell you every week, my editorials can be found at conservativenationradioshows.wordpress.com. That is my blog, and that is where I keep my I turn my verbal editorials as best I can into written editorials, but, you know, I'm kind of like Jack Kerouac in that I write like I talk, and so my punctuation – thank goodness for Becca, because my grammar is atrocious. Anyway, today's editorial is Conservative Cajun Catfish Court Bouillon. And, you know, yesterday Senator Rick Santorum won Louisiana with 49 – oh, by the way, do you think it's possible that I could – weave a recipe into a conservative blog? Well, I'm about to show you how. You see, yesterday, Senator Rick Santorum won Louisiana with 49% of the vote. Mitt Romney came in a distant second with 27%, which was 2% more than I wanted him to get, but still a distant second. I gleefully went to bed and slept a solid, peaceful 8 hours last night. As I laid there, I got to thinking about the wonderful cuisine of my Cajun brothers and sisters, and it occurred to me this primary was just that: spicy, delicious, and fun to swallow. It had all the ingredients of the best that Bayou Country has to offer, which included two medium yellow onions, chopped, one green bell pepper chopped, two cloves of garlic chopped, a bunch of parsley chopped, one bunch of green onion tops chopped, 1 8-ounce can of tomato sauce, 1 cup, 8 ounces of water, 2 tablespoons of flour, 1 tablespoon of salt, 1 tablespoon of black pepper, 1 tablespoon of cayenne pepper, and 3 pounds of the South's favorite fish, catfish. Now you're wondering to yourself, Michael, what has this got to do with Rick Santorum? Well, I'm about to tell you. You see, since before Iowa, the mainstream media has played the narrative that Rick cannot win. Yet, as of today, Rick has won overwhelmingly in strong conservative loyal states. While the presumptive nominee is winning in areas that will be overwhelmingly Obama strongholds. That is, unless, of course, there is a strong, clear, concise alternative to President Obama. Earlier this week, we got the spice from both of our campaign, from both our campaign and Governor Romney's campaign. After Illinois win last Tuesday, Eric Fernstrom, which is Governor Romney's communications director, in response to a question about being pulled so far right by Senator Santorum and Speaker Gingrich, he responded, "Romney would hit a reset button in the general election. It's almost like an etch-a-sketch." Now, of course, they and the Romney supporters are spinning the narrative that what he meant was in the general, we would reset the campaign, not the words. The problem is, and this is the delicious part, folks, that's not what Mr. Fernstrom intended it to be. He indeed actually meant it exactly the way he said it. That all this conservative banner meant is conveniently throwing about now will be erased in the general. Let me just insert a Southern saying here. Shame on you, Mitt. Don't piss on my leg and tell me it's raining, boy. You, like John Kerry of your home, Massachusetts, have been on both sides of every issue and think we're a bunch of damn dummies. Your campaign director nailed you with an image that will last with time. Where you might think it will be forgotten, it won't, sir. It will remain in our American lexicon just like, say, read my lips, or I knew Jack Kennedy, and you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy. Even though most illiterate persons know who said those things or whom they refer to, you shall forever be linked to Etch-a-Sketch. Mr. Romney, and with $1 billion to spend in the general, Obama and the left wing will hang it around your neck like a leash that will never come off. Now, let's compare that delicious blunder to Senator Santorum's inartful thought. Let's just call it what it was. It was a little inartful, though I agree with it. Last week in the news, in my hometown, that wonderful dish I call San Antonio, Senator Santorum, you win by giving people a choice. You win by giving people the opportunity to see a different vision for our country, not someone who's just going to be a little different than the person in there. He then added, if they're going to be a little different, we might as well stay with what we have instead of taking a risk with what may be an Etch-a-Sketch candidate in the future. Now, of course, we all know that Senator Santorum was referring to the general election and the choice between President Obama and Governor Romney and what choice most average people might make. Let me be clear on this. Senator Santorum was hypothesizing what most average folks, not political junkies like us, will do at the polls in November. Given the choice of Obama and Romney, Senator Santorum is correct. There is very little difference to the average person between Mitt Romney and Barack Obama. Oh, sure, we all know that Romney would be much better than Obama, and there is some difference, but the truth is, and they played their hand, they being the Obama campaign this morning, David Plouffe, played their hand on every single show this morning. I saw it on Meet the Press and the one with Steffi. They are going to beat Romney over the head with this narrative, folks. Romney is the godfather of Obamacare. In Louisiana yesterday, exit polls showed folks by 50% see Santorum as the clear conservative choice. conservative stronghold after conservative stronghold has overwhelmingly chosen Senator Santorum. And in those states Mitt has won, it has been a very weak win. Folks, the choice couldn't be clearer. If you want to win the general, we need the delicious, tasty, spicy candidate. The one who oozes conservatism. Not the bland, tasteless flip-flopper who has the feel of a runny egg. Now I bet y'all want the rest of that recipe, don't you? Friends and patriots, enjoy it. It's on my blog, but I'll go ahead and tell you. Put 1 tablespoon of cooking oil in a number 14 cast iron pot. Put a thin layer of mixture all over the vegetables, but the green onions and the parsley on the bottom of the pot. Follow with a single loose layer of fish pieces. Sprinkle some of the mixture of the seasonings and some of the flour on top of the fish. Drizzle some of the tomato sauce and water over the seasonings. Repeat the layering process, adding more flour, seasonings, vegetables, and tomato sauce as needed until there's no more fish left. Boil covered over a very low heat for 30 to 45 minutes. Then add the green onions, the parsley, and cook for another 5 minutes and serve over boiled rice. That's my editorial, and I'm sticking to it. Let's bring in my partner here, Becca. What say you, my friend?
Well, Michael, again, another great commentary, and thank goodness I ate lunch because I would be running for the kitchen and starving if I weren't.
I think I must be the only fool that can somehow or another weave food into a conservative commentary.
It's just, you're talented. I don't know. I don't know how you did it either, but just inspiration happens, and you come up with things. So,
I've actually got you to thank for that. It was in our pre-show this morning. You know, folks, Beck and I talk every Sunday morning, 10:30 over coffee. Becca says, okay, Michael, this is the guest today. This is what we're doing. I say, okay, Becca, here's the editorial if it's my week for the first hour, or here's my editorial for the second hour, whatever the case may be. And we were talking this morning, Becca, and I as usual, you know how I am, buddy. I didn't have my editorial at 10:30 this morning. I had a few things that was running across my head. I was thinking about food. I was thinking about Louisiana. I was thinking about the wind. And I don't know, you said something, I can't remember exactly what it is, and I said, buddy, that's it right there. That's my editorial, Food and Rick Santorum, the spicy win in Louisiana. And that's what we got.
That is what we got. That is what we got for sure. And you know, you wove in all the different stories, the kind of controversies, the fake controversies, the Etch-a-Sketch. You really couldn't do any better there with getting everything in that went on. So,
well, and I'm not the only one that blogs. I know you'll probably speak about this in a little bit, but tell us, you blog on We Pick Rick as well.
Right.
And you've got a good piece on there today.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, I do have a new piece, and I did kind of combine some of the things that I posted earlier, actually just the last couple days, just so it's all kind of in one place. And I called it Do You Hear Him Now, Mainstream Media? And it has a combination of the different graphics that I made and also some excerpts from the this week's show that Rick Santorum was on last week. And what I started to do was I just realized just how little of what he says on those shows is getting out anywhere beyond maybe their website, the things that he actually does say on there. So starting last week, I decided I'm going to make 2 blogs a week. One is going to be like this, where I kind of separate what he says from the crazy biased questions that he gets. And then another one is something called Santorum Grassroots, the Experience. And that goes along with the We Pick Rick radio show, where I try to pluck out a group of grassroots supporters and give them kind of the spotlight. You know, they're working so hard out there for Rick, and, you know, just kind of highlight a rally or you know, whatever. The one this week actually was about the kind of centered around Dixon and that day on Monday where Rick did 4 different events. And this lady in the grassroots went with a group, and they went to 3 of those 4 events from Muncie. They drove up from Indiana. Montana to go out there. And so I encourage people to go to weepforgrick.net, and you just put my name in, it's Becca Lower, and you can see what these people, what your fellow grassroots people are doing, and maybe you can get some ideas. You just be inspired by what they're doing.
Well, and you know, that's it. And we all, you know, we all feed off of one another. And you know, our, oh my gosh, our studio board's lighting up here. So I just want to say real quickly, and then I'm going to let you bring Adam on while I answer some phone calls. But to what you were saying, you know, we do, we all feed off, and that's what makes this so. And many of us, of course, came. You know, I say this week in, week out. Many of us are friends from Mr. Kane's campaign. And quickly came over to Senator Santorum after December 3rd. So many of us go way back, and you know, I've even noticed back then we inspire and motivate each other to give our best. Brenda was just counting votes. Brenda Ward, our host for Women Patriots, was I know last Tuesday she was counting votes over in Illinois,
Indiana.
You know, or Indiana. Yeah. So you know. This is what we're doing on this campaign. You know, I think probably in the back of our minds, maybe we don't want to admit it, but we all might have a pretty good idea where this thing's going to end up. But here's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
With the way we've been outspent, for this campaign, for Senator Santorum to have done what he's done and accomplished what he's accomplished with grassroots campaign. I mean, this is grassroots, the truest form of grassroots.
Right, like
and
they say, shoestring.
Yes, and we have done and accomplished, you know, every single person in the chat room, all of our 400 or 500 friends we all have on Facebook, on Twitter, you know, we have built something that, quite honestly, if things don't go the way we want them to go by the end of this process in 4 years, we'll all be coming back together because, as I alluded to in my editorial, I don't see if and God, please let it be an if. I really want the nominee to be Senator Santorum, we have as good a chance as anybody. But if it should be Romney, I don't think he'll win, and I think in 3 years. In that time frame, of course, we will all stay together. But I think in 3 years we'll all be back together doing this again.
I hope, yeah. That
well, I mean, I hope not. I hope that in November it's a choice between Santorum and Obama. But you know what I mean? Anyway,
yes,
listen,
I do know what you mean.
Becca, I'm going to let you take you do your thing with Mr. Teagle here. Get him on. I'm gonna go ahead and put him on a hot mic, and we've got 4 or 5 different phone calls we need to answer, so I'll get to those. Okay, Patriot?
Thank you, Patriot. Thank you so much.
Thank you, buddy.
All right. Now, Patriots, we do have a very special guest today, and I'm afraid I'm probably going to say his name wrong. I want to say his name is Tackle. Tackle, thank you.
That is correct.
Yay. Okay. Adam Tackle worked for Senator Santorum from 1997 to 2000 as an intern at Station Square office in Pittsburgh. He moved to D.C. to work with him in his press department and scheduler, and then came back to Pittsburgh to work for Santorum 2000, doing all kinds of events. As he says, wherever they needed me, I went. I helped in the office with donations, out of the office with press events, and with college trips. A lot of fun with Rick. And, Adam, we do welcome you to Soldiers of Patriotism to have some fun with us today. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. Thank you for having me on the air.
No problem. I was so inspired by some of the things that you posted on Team Santorum, and just I feel really blessed that, you know, I could cheer you with our listeners. If you could just talk a little bit about Senator Santorum, about your experiences with him, and just really just give us kind of a taste of how it was for you to work with him.
Sure, I would be happy to. I think that Senator Santorum is a stand-up guy. I think he's very down to earth. He enjoys talking college sports as much as any other Penn State fan. And I began working for him as an intern in 1997 at the Station Square office. And I was working with all of his legislative assistants and his primary scheduler, Nancy Garber. It was quite an experience. Basically, I began working with the constituent relations and enjoyed working in the. I enjoyed working as an intern so much that after my first year and a half, I basically took a transfer over to the D.C. office. Keith, who was our chief of staff in Pittsburgh, and Nancy moved me over to the D.C. office to work in the Russell Senate building for the communications director, Robert Trainum, and with the IT director, Ellen Regal, in D.C. And I worked with worked on all of the press releases during the Clinton impeachment trial with Robert Trainum, and it was a very exciting time to be working for Senator Santorum. And at the conclusion of that internship, I was fortunate enough to move back to Pittsburgh to work on Santorum 2000, which was an amazing experience. I watched a lot of dedication of all of his supporters come together, and it was a lot of willpower, teamwork, and it was a laser beam focus from Senator Santorum on this campaign on Santorum 2000, and it resulted in a huge win and, dominating victory for the Santorum 2000 staff. It was a really fantastic ride for Santorum 2000. And over the course of the campaign, I got to go to Harrisburg. We went to the Harrisburg Hilton together, where I watched him deliver a very powerful speech to the PA College Republican State Chairman Convention at the Hilton, where he got up and talked about saving Social Security, privatization, before it was a cool topic to talk about, before anybody else wanted to talk about it. He never wavered from his point of view, from his beliefs, didn't ride any popularity polls to make any decisions, spoke about what he believed in, and not what he considered to be cool or popular, but rather what he really believed in, which is what he always taught me and taught our staff, which is you fight for what you believe in, not what's considered cool. And as a person, he's a great leader, but he's a very cool, down-to-earth guy. And the liberal media, I feel like, portrays him in a way that shows him sort of as an elitist, but sort of in a light that, he can't relate to society, or that he just stays to the Christian right of spending all of his time in church, which is really not true. And he is a very down-to-earth guy, and he's very easy to speak to. And he stays true to his point of view and to his belief. And because of that, he always taught his staff that, you know what, this is what makes him who he is, and his laser beam focus on winning the campaign, but also staying true to his beliefs was so important that it shined through at the end of that campaign. And he even remained focused to it after losing the Senate campaign in 2006, which is quite remarkable. And that's what you're seeing, you know, coming through in this election right now. And it's quite remarkable.
Awesome.
And, I'm proud to see all of the grassroots efforts going on, and I'm happy to be a part of it. And everybody that's rallying around him right now, that's stepping up to get his message, to get his message really blasted out over Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and all over social media right now is critical, because it's tough to compete against Mitt Romney's high finance budget. And Senator Santorum might not have all the campaign funds, but the grassroots is what's really moving this campaign, and it's very impressive. And Senator Santorum's focus and his core beliefs are what's really moving this campaign.
That is so true. What can you say to the grassroots, the ones that are just really fired up now? I mean, they kind of were down a little bit, I think. I know I personally was about Illinois, but just for a day, or part of a day. But what can you say to them about how Rick has overcome the money, where he's had unions, he's had, these establishment Democrats, establishment people always overspending or outspending him? What would you say to the people now, to help them, to help them? And I think you kind of have a little bit, but, is there something we're not doing, or something we could do more of, or something?
Well, the issue of money is, you know, is it's always going to be an issue in modern day politics campaigning, and there's really not much you can do to, you know, to overcome people who want to spend a ton of money on a campaign other than doing exactly what we're doing, which is using all the grassroots power that we have on social media and taking advantage of every free resource that's available through Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, and every blog and every single web radio station and every resource that's available of spreading the word to get the message out there through YouTube, through every way possible, so that people can actually see that Rick Santorum is not who he really is, and to see the message that he's spreading of what his beliefs are and how he stood to his beliefs even when he lost an election in 2006, for him to be running another campaign on the exact same beliefs where he got pretty badly beaten in 2006, and to be coming out and coming off of his 11th win in the primary is pretty remarkable. And people are starting to wake up and realize that he's holding true to his values, and that Mitt Romney has flip-flopped all over the place, and that he's just doing whatever the polls are telling him to do, which is quite different from what Rick Santorum's doing.
Absolutely. I mean, he definitely doesn't just put a finger up and see which way the wind's blowing.
He never has. I mean, back in 2000, on Santorum 2000, when he stood up before the PA College Republican State Chairman Convention with me at the Harrisburg Hilton, and was talking about privatization and Social Security reform before anybody really wanted to face up to the fact that Social Security was in major trouble. He knew that it was in trouble, and he came up with his solution, and to this day he's still running on the exact same principles that he was back in Santorum 2000. And for me to see a guy who's running on the same principles and the same beliefs, even after losing an election in 2006 as badly as he did, and now coming back to win 11 primaries is fantastic.
It's amazing. And I want to ask you really quickly about when he was in the Senate, or actually when he had lost that race, you know, when he wasn't able to go back to the Senate. There's a story that I had heard, and actually it was from Pastor Kerry Gordon, who was one of the first people to endorse Rick Santorum in this cycle, as far as one of the big evangelical voices in Iowa. And he said, and he said actually the next day that after he spoke with him that he had Rick had said this on a radio show, so it's not like privileged or anything. He said that Rick had said to him that after he lost that race, that he had come to a realization about himself, that he had become arrogant, and that he realized that he needed to kind of look at himself a little more, and that it had kind of changed his perspective on things. Can you speak to that at all? Or, I mean, I don't know if you spoke to him after.
Well,
obviously, I guess you still were there.
I wasn't a part of that campaign, so I really can't speak on behalf of that. But say that, that if he's calling himself arrogant, then
it was him himself that said it. Mm-hmm.
If he himself is saying that he had recognized, he was able to look himself in the mirror and say that he identified himself, that there was a problem, then that's overcoming, you know, a lot of what, that's making a huge statement in itself. And and being able to look yourself in the mirror and overcome challenges in which you're realizing are problems is a difficult task that a lot of people run away from. And being able to look yourself in the mirror at the end of the day and tell yourself that where your own problems are is a problem that a lot of people have. And I think that his inner strength and his inner guidance, which has been able to keep him on task and keep this laser beam focus that he's always demonstrated, is what's keeping him today on task and so driven and so motivated to chase Mitt Romney, even though he's so underfunded. Nobody predicted that the Santorum camp was going to come out and do what they're doing in this election. Nobody. And the fact The fact is that John Brabender and everybody else that's behind the Santorum team, you know, just pooled every resource that they had and are utilizing all of the strength from within and are shocking everybody.
Yeah, and the reason I brought that up, it's not, you know, it's definitely for in a positive light, you know, just like you were saying, because I did get to very briefly meet the senator the very first event in Ohio after he was endorsed by our Attorney General, Mike DeWine. There was an event very near my home, and I shook his hand, and actually during the speech that he gave, he really talked about how important Ohio was and how many delegates we had, and I really got a sense from him of a great deal of humility, and it just was very striking and very compelling to me to see that in someone that's running for president. And that's why I wanted to mention that story from the pastor, because he had sensed that too, just from his conversations, in person and on the phone, that's something that is just very special, and you can't fake that.
You know what? He is a very down-to-earth guy, and I guess after being in the Senate for so many years and being in a powerful position, I guess that has the ability to make anybody a little bit self-confident or arrogant, and the fact that he was able to, look himself in the mirror and make that judgment call and say that I need to adjust that or work on that is, all the power to him. I just think that, and I'm saying that in a positive way. I feel as though his drive is so amazing, and the fact that he is a down-to-earth guy and that you can just sit and talk college sports with him as a regular guy is pretty remarkable, because he really isn't a very arrogant guy. He's just a regular guy, and he's a regular Penn State fan. And if you want to sit and talk about college sports with him, you can have that conversation with him at any given time. And he's happy to have that conversation. And if you want to talk about Social Security, he'll have that conversation as well. So, that's what makes him such an amazing guy. And I think that America doesn't get a chance to see that because the media portrays him in a light that doesn't offer the average American on, say, CNN or some of these other talk shows where Meet the Press are gonna push him or corner him into asking him some ridiculous questions.
Right.
They don't give you the opportunity to really get to know him or to really get to see what he's like as a person other than being a politician. But he's really quite a cool guy.
Well, that is so great. And it's really just been my feeling that just even the last month or so, where I myself, a lot of other people too, I'm sure, are noticing you and some other people that have just really known Rick for a while, had worked with him or been a supporter for a long time, and have the idea that we need to hear these stories, that we need to hear from like just secondhand, or first, from yourself. And I think that that's going to be very important for the grassroots, for the team, to hear those stories. And so it's an honor. I mean, it really is an honor for the rest of us to get to hear what you experienced.
It was a blast working with him for all those years. And I'll tell you what, it was a stressful time being in D.C. for the Clinton impeachment trial for everybody. And that was a trying time for everybody. And sitting before that trial, it was grueling, and for all the senators. And it was a test of everybody's patience and everybody's will. But Senator Santorum really handled it like a gentleman, and it was a quite historic time to be working for him in D.C. to get to know him. And getting to know him from the time that Mario Lemieux bought the Pittsburgh Penguins and how he worked with that deal all the way through to, how he handled the Clinton's impeachment trial were just part of history. And being, Pittsburgh couldn't have couldn't have seen a better owner from Mario Lemieux come to take over the Pittsburgh Penguins. But he's a very genuine guy, Senator Santorum, and he's going to make the best nominee for the Republican Party. And I'm very excited that the grassroots level is pushing this election and actually challenging Mitt Romney's money to say, hey, there is a better choice out there for the Republican Party to face Obama in the general election.
Definitely. I mean, if you look at somewhere like Florida, I mean, that's just the first one that always comes to my mind, where the campaign didn't even spend a penny in advertising. And, you know, it was 13% that he got. And so, you know, that's the amazing thing about it. And now you're talking about, when you started talking a little bit about the Senate, it made me think about maybe some of the other legislation that the senator championed or the senator did. And am I correct? It was the partial birth abortion ban?
Yep, I was there
when we set up all the
partial birth abortion Senate displays on the Senate floor. And it was pretty amazing to watch how emotional of a time that was, and setting up all of these Senate displays of what these pictures were and how graphic they were and how emotional it was, but how passionate he is for his job and how much he believes in what he's doing. It's amazing. It pours out of him. And there's no way that anybody can fake that. You know what I mean? It's just,
sure.
It's a remarkable thing. It's a remarkable characteristic that he possesses, to be around him, to the energy that honesty comes out and when he's actually talking about something that he cares so much about. And, the partial birth abortion was just one of the issues that was on the Senate floor when I worked in D.C. and helped, was there for. That was a very passionate and emotional time. And I got to sit and watch that live on the Senate floor. It was really remarkable.
That is really wonderful. Thank you for sharing that. I know that's of interest to a lot of the grassroots, that specific issue and that specific legislation. So that wonderful to have the background on that. Now, if you like, Adam, I do have some callers. If you'd like me to bring them on, if they have a comment or a question for you, would that be okay?
Absolutely.
Okay. I do have Dave from Los Angeles that he says he wants to offer some tools. I don't know if he's asking for you to offer tools or if he wants to offer tools to win. But, Dave, do you have something for Adam? Actually, let me put him on.
Yes.
Dave, did you have a comment for Adam?
Yes.
Oh, go ahead.
Yes. Hi. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I hear you.
Okay, great. Yes, I didn't catch who the guest is, actually. Just out of consideration, I'd like to – is this the host or the guest that I'm talking to?
Well, I'm actually one of the hosts. My name is Becca Lower, but the guest is Adam Teckel, and he actually worked with Senator Santorum when Senator was in the Senate, and that's who is on our show. Is that not who you were calling to speak to?
Great. Well, I saw your link up on a friend's Facebook
post. Okay.
But I have some things that I think will be very powerful for people listening, and I hope that you'll share this with your friends, because I'm going to offer something that not many people really know about, because when you're in party politics, it's the Republican Party, you can be involved in campaigns and over the years and never know this information unless you go up on the FEC website and read about it or hear from some of it from, like, Rush Limbaugh, who I originally heard some of this from back in 1994. Mm-hmm. I called the FEC and got the pamphlets on how to start a political action committee, but that's not the main focus of tax money that I want to talk about. Further, I like to talk about this tool. It's called independent expenditures, that any citizen, if you have the money, you can have $1,000, you can have $500, you can call a radio station and spend that money on an ad, you can have $1,000,000, $100,000, and use this to spend on the candidate of your choice or candidates. You can do this from any state you live in and do it out to any states, as many states as you want to. There's the website called radio low. It's radio and then hyphen, you know, the dash, and then.
Okay, but not, Dave, how is this relevant to Rick Santorum? Or
it's very. Oh, it's big. This is so huge that if this gets out to people, this is how you personally can help this campaign, and it's allowable. You're allowed. Anybody is allowed to talk about this, as long as you're not a candidate staff member. Therefore, if you do this, you're coordinating. I'm not a staff member. I can go out and teach this, which I'm doing on the internet. I'm teaching people how to do this because you can go out and do your own ads for them.
Is this something that you're selling?
No, it's not for sale. No, this is from the FEC. This is from the Federal Elections Commission. This is information. It's public, okay?
I understand.
And I have a website that I created called Project Zephyr, ZEPHYR .wordpress.com. And, you know, the Federal Elections Commission said, you know, I got the rules on how to do this, how to teach. I got it from them. I've called and asked gazillions of questions. I can do this on the internet, on radio, anywhere I want. I can teach people how to do this because this is what the FEC provides for any citizen to do.
Okay.
Dave,
are you in the chat room? Because you can feel free to type that in the chat room for the other listeners. And
well,
Adam, did you have any comment for Dave?
No, I'm not really sure. I'm not really sure how that's going to benefit other than people donating money. I think are best off donating money directly to the campaign.
Well, this is what happens. If this way. You see, what any citizen can contribute to Senator Santorum's presidential campaign, only $2,500 during this primary election, and then when it changes over the general, let's say he's the candidate, the nominee, they can only contribute personally $2,500. But if you as a citizen have $20,000, you can't give that to him. You can use it better. You can't give it to him, but you can help him by doing your own ads with that money, mass mailers in any state you want. It's called independent expenditures.
That's very, very interesting, and I think that's useful. If you can go in the chat room and put that in, the people will be able to see your website and get more information on it. But we're going
to
go on to another
to
caller.
I tried to do that, but I don't remember my username.
Yeah,
so,
well, then maybe they can send me another one. But thank you so much. Thank you, Dave.
I'm sorry. Becca, let me jump in here. Dave, let me give you my
put him back on. There you go. Go ahead,
Dave. Hey,
Michael,
Dave.
Michael wants to talk to you.
Let me give you my email address.
Okay.
And I would like that information. I'm a state leader here in the state of Texas, so in our primaries coming up. Email me. It's simple. It's conservativenationradioshows@gmail.com.
Okay, I'm going to conservative.
Yeah, it's just like on the banner there, conservativenationradioshows@gmail.com. And if you'll stick around, we'd love to have you on the round table. Okay, buddy?
Okay.
All right, thanks a lot. Go ahead, Becca. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt you, buddy.
No, I appreciate it. Do you have something? Do you go ahead and Adam?
We talked to Adam. I wanted to, it must just be wonderful to be in the shoes that you've been in. I've had the pleasure and the honor of getting to shake Senator Santorum's hand. Becca and I do this every week for Senator Santorum. I'd love to get him on my show. It's not where I'm going, is to get you to help me with that. But whether I get him on or not, it is insignificant. I do this for my love for him, his family, and for our country. He was just here in town earlier this week, and he did a couple of house parties. And I know that he did a lot of those in Iowa. In fact, I'm going to try my darndest to get one put together here at $250 a pop. I'm the precinct leader in my precinct here in Hazlett, Texas. I live out in the country, and we only have two precincts. But I'm going to try to put one together where people can come and get a little, maybe not one-on-one time with Senator Santorum. But at $250 a pop, I'm thinking if I can get 150, 200 people in there, that's, 35, 50K.
Yeah, that's a nice chunk of change, for sure.
Yeah, it is. It is. And I think in late April, early May, well, he comes to Texas all the time. Texas, let's just be frank, Adam. Texas is a state designed specifically for Senator Santorum. Now, when it comes to the general, we're going to vote for whoever the nominee is. That's just a granted. But in the primary, I guarantee you, Senator Santorum will win. I don't make that guarantee lightly. I know he will win. Governor Romney does not stand a chance here. The only person that would have offered us any kind of a competition would have been Newt. But I don't think Newt has a chance simply because he's doing so poorly in the polls that we conservatives, let's be honest, Texas is a very, very conservative Bible Belt state. We like us some conservative, as we like to say. So Senator Santorum's going to get that, but nonetheless, he will be spending as much time as he's already been here. He will be spending a whole lot more. I think Texas, as to the Democrats' dismay in trying to mess up our redistricting, which we did legally by virtue of the fact that we win. You know, as the saying goes, years that end in zero, you want your party to win. We legally did our redistricting. The Democrats found a liberal judge. Anyway, where I'm going with that, tell us a little bit about Senator Santorum loves one-on-one. He loves house parties. I think that speaks a lot to his character. You know Senator Santorum.
Yeah.
Maybe you can elaborate on that. What is it about this man that drives him to – want to be so free, which I'm thankful for, of his time, in doing that with,
Well, the reason that he loves one-on-ones is because he's a one-on-one type of guy. Some politicians hide behind the party or they hide behind other people. He's not one of those politicians. And he's not afraid of one-on-ones because he's himself. And that doesn't come to every politician, and he's very natural in a one-on-one environment because he just is himself, and he's a very regular, down-to-earth guy, and he shines in that type of environment because he's such a cool, down-to-earth guy that you can shake his hand and talk about just life, and you can talk about sports, and you can talk about Social Security. You can talk about whatever your topic of choice is, and he's able to have a conversation that's very normal, very regular Joe, and not Chris Matthews on Hardball focused. And the point is that some politicians, you can't put them in an environment like that and have them survive.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
They're overly polished, and they're not used to that, and they don't want to bring themselves to the level of being in a situation where they're going to just have to talk one-on-one with people because that's not their game. But
exactly.
But Senator Santorum that's not what made him who he is. And he does really well in that type of environment because he's very genuine and because there's no BS to him. And he is who he is. And like I said, he came off of a bad loss in 2006. And he's now running on the exact same principles that just caused him a big loss, and he's now come off of his 11th primary win. And the reason is because he's sticking to what he believes in. And he's always taught his staff and his constituents and everybody around him that if you fight for what you believe in and you stay true to yourself, then you will win. And what I said to Becca was even though she felt a little disheartened or a little down after what happened in Illinois, keep the message positive, and the message will find its way to victory. The message will get out there, and I'm not thinking it's going to take another 4 years for that message to come out because I think that people are going to get tired of the etch-a-sketch, flip-flop that's going on right now, and the public is eventually going to see through it. And when you're a phony, you can't put yourself into an environment where people can have at you one-on-one. But when you're genuine, you can. And that's when you can do well in a situation like that.
Exactly. Well, Go ahead, Becca.
Okay, I just wanted to interject really quickly, Adam. That I love that word phony, and it just kind of rang a bell because the second grassroots blog that I wrote, or actually they wrote it, they used that word phony about the other candidates. They said that Rick, that they didn't get the sense that Rick was like that. This is the lady that went to 3 different events out of 4 events in Illinois the day before their primary. And
he's the opposite of phony.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. Is she stood there and she overheard him talking with the people, you know, right before she shook his hand. And she said he didn't just say, yeah, whatever, you know, when he was speaking to them. And that's what you would expect, you know, from somebody that has hundreds upon hundreds upon hundreds. I mean, if you just look at Iowa and just the, you know, hundreds of things, and it looks like he wants to meet every single person in that room, and he does, you know, when he gets the chance to do it. Go ahead, Michael.
Well, really, Adam, you got a few minutes. Our next guest is waiting, Stephen, and I hope he'll hang tight. In fact, I might bring Stephen in on this.
Michael, he will. No, he will. He'll hold.
Okay. Well, here's where I'm going. Here's where I'm going, Paige. We just got a phone call. I'm going to give a little background to this gentleman, okay? When I first started what we all know now as Santorum's Soldiers of Patriotism, it was originally, as you will recall, Becca, it was Cane Nation, Texas. My banner then was Cane Nation Radio Shows, and where it has changed now to Conservative Nation Radio Shows, and all but one of our shows is Santorum-sponsored shows. They're all conservative, but all but one is a show that is geared towards Senator Santorum. Anyway, I'm going off on a tangent. Becca, that's when you need to slap your partner and say, Michael, get on track.
Sorry. I'm just getting some little messages from people. So related to the show.
We had the pleasure of having a gentleman on the show, who goes under the tag Mr. Colorado. Mr. Colorado, it's been a long time since I've spoken to Mr. Colorado. I'm going to go ahead and open up your mic, Mr. Colorado. As I recall, at the time, Mr. Colorado was an apparent Democrat, but he held a very intelligent conversation, as I recall, at the time. And as I recall, our support of Mr. Cane when the show was a Cane show, Mr. Colorado wanted to disagree with us. But I believe it by the end of the show anyway, he was willing to entertain what we were thinking. Now, it's been a long time since I've spoken to Mr. Colorado. He called in, and I would like to pull him in because I know that he is a Democrat. But you know, we've got Adam Teichel on, who knows
Teichel.
Senator Teichel. I'm sorry,
Adam Teichel.
Who knows
That's
Senator
okay.
But I'd like, hey guys, and you know, I could. I hope that Mr. Colorado. I know him to be a good man, and I know that he respects us, but he has his opinions. I'd like to go ahead and pull him in here, and let's see what Mr. Colorado has to say. Are you okay with that, Adam and Becca?
Yeah.
Okay, Mr. Colorado. Buddy,
hello. Well, I'm just I was listening to the show, and I'm seeing y'all saying something about the people that perpetrating this front. What's the guy name that running for president? The one that he keep his beliefs. I believe church and politics do not belong together. I believe we need to leave church, and let's do politics because it's splitting up this country. I don't understand. And then another thing that I want to talk about to you guys is about what's going on in Florida with the new laws that the conservatives are passing around the United States by fine all the police officers and putting these guns in the hand of people who just think they – it's okay to shoot the kid because they feel their life in danger. And if ain't nobody there to watch this, that's qualified them to kill people. So to me, see, all these laws that we passing around the United States and taking the jobs from the police office, and we leaving a lot of dead people on the streets of America because I don't figure that's a job that people like that crazy guy who shot that kid in Florida.
Let me just quantify real quickly, Mr. Colorado. A couple of good points. We'd be glad to tackle them with you, wouldn't we, Adam? You're speaking about the stand your ground law in Florida.
Yes.
Here in Texas, we call it a castle law. Okay. In other words, a man's home is his castle, and you've got the right to defend your castle.
Right.
Now, you know, setting aside for the moment whether or not Mr. Zimmerman is a racist, because we don't know. Mr. Colorado, would you agree that if you're on your property or if that you are in the process of being on a neighborhood watch in your community, and I don't know the circumstances around what happened with young Trayvon Martin. It is a travesty that this young 17-year-old man
Looked like he was 15 years old. And, okay, I can understand. Okay, this guy was in his place where his father lived. He was heading home. And then when you listen to all these tapes, every time this guy see a black person, they look suspicious to him. 45 calls, out of 45 of them calls, majority of them because he's seen a black person. So, and then if you listen to them tapes and listen to the people and listen to him driving around following this kid. You know, this kid didn't remember, "Dad, I'm going to the store. It's halftime. I'm going to go to the store, get me some goodies, and I'm going to come back and finish the game with you." So when you come to tell me, because you can walk out to your house and all this, let me just put it this way. When you, and don't take it personal, I'm not being racist or nothing. When you listen on the news, and every time you look around, it's a bunch of school shooting. What about if black people start looking at little white boys? Like, oh, is he a school shooter? Is he going to go shoot somebody? Just start profiling every little white kid that's going somewhere to shoot up some people at a school. Then, you know, so we need to stop profiling people and thinking, because this kid had his hoodie on, he got to be up to something. Okay, if we start looking at little white kids, oh, okay, he might be a school shooter. He might be up to something. And people start profiling that way. See, this profile, see, that's racist. That's what I call racist. This kid didn't do nothing but leave his dad at the house to go get him an iced tea and a box of candy like your kid will do, my kid will do. And then you got this psycho kid because he feel he can get away with what he did behind this law because this law justified him to follow this kid when the officer told him, "We don't need you to do that. We don't need." But every time he make a call, every time he see a black person, that means they got to be up to something. I'm getting sick and tired of people thinking it's okay to profile. Even like myself, I could walk across the street and a person could be parked at a stop sign. Soon they see me, first thing they do, they get to popping their locks on their door like I'm finna carjack them. You know, carjack just don't happen in the black community. They happen in every community. School shooting going on in the suburbs, yes, and a lot of stuff going on in the black. So the most people who do more harm to white people is white people. The most people that do harm to black people is black people. We need to stop profiling, and we need to look at this nature as one and stop trying to judge each other and splitting us up. Because you know what? When we got them soldiers over there dying for this country, they ain't dying for black and white. They dying for America. And we need to stop looking at each other like we out to hurt each other all the time. Because it ain't like that.
Okay, Mr. Colorado?
Yes.
I'm very glad that you do express your opinion, but we do allow other people to express their opinions on here, too. I actually do have someone who's one of our regular listeners who's been waiting about 30 minutes, and I would love for him to be able to speak to our guest, who we expressly asked on today. So if you don't mind, I'd love to, if someone has something to interject and to speak to what you said, I would love for them to do that. But I do have other people that really would like to speak to our special guest today.
Yeah. Hang tight, okay, Mr. Colorado?
I got you.
All right, go ahead, Becca, pull them on.
Thank you so much. Adam, I would really love to meet one of our Patriot friends from the great state of Texas. Yeah, the Bluegrass State, Kentucky. This is Danny Schaus. And Danny, you have something to say to Adam today?
Yes, he was talking about Rick in person, and I've got to speak to him on the phone, and he really is a lot better, like one-on-one, than what you see on the TV. And also, I come up with that idea of the people doing the post-it note campaigns on the gas pumps and to add a vote for Rick Santorum to it, you know, where they're equating the high price of gas to Obama.
I've been doing that, Danny.
You have?
Well,
yeah. what I put is if you like these if you like these high gas prices, thank the man who put the moratorium on drilling in the Gulf, who has vetoed the Keystone Pipeline, who currently lives at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. And that's what I...
That's great.
Well, now,
Adam,
bottom,
did you have something to say? Go ahead.
At the bottom, he needs to add vote for Santorum.
Yeah, absolutely.
Anything else, Danny?
That's it.
You're always a man of few words, Danny.
Brother South is. Brother South.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, Brother South has always been a man of few words.
Yeah, Twitter works great for me.
Well, hang tight, Brother Schaus, you probably remember Mr. Colorado from earlier calls. So here in a little bit we'll get Mr. Colorado on and we'll address his needs when after we have our other guest on here. Okay.
Right.
Okay.
All right, Becca, go ahead, buddy.
All right. Well, let's see. What else do we want? Well, we do have, it's just kind of the top of the hour, so I could talk a little bit about the blog that I just put out today. It's today. It was 5:30 this morning. I got it done.
Well, let's do a piece PSA real quick.
Oh, please. Okay, go ahead.
And then coming in out of the PSA, you go into your thing. Okay, buddy?
Okay, great. Thanks, Michael.
All right. Now, this is the one, of course, you know where I'll be crying.
I do know that, but you can feel free to mute yourself. Not a problem. Medic went out.
This is WWP.org, folks. Wounded Warrior Project. That was when he was. Any extra dollars you got, send them to our young men and women.
Say a prayer for peace. Alan was one of the first wounded warriors to come out of Iraq in 2003. I'm Trace Atkins, and I want to tell you about Wounded Warrior Project and how they helped this brave young man and his family.
There was life in his eyes, but everything else was non-responsive.
The doctors anticipated that Alan would be bedridden and need to be spoon-fed for the rest of his life.
The job of helping wounded warriors rebuild their lives is massive and growing every day. Your gift of just $19 a month will help wounded warriors like Alan, who refuse to give up.
I'm in the fields of Vietnam, the mountains of Afghanistan.
Earned the Purple Heart and the Bronze Star for his actions on the battlefield. He is a true American hero. But Alan became my hero for the battle he fought day after day after day to get his life back.
Your call today and a gift of $19 a month can help provide our wounded warriors with desperately needed programs and services through Wounded Warrior Project.
I would encourage you to donate to the Wounded Warrior Project.
It's going to take a lot of us for a long time to help these young men and women.
Call or go online with a pledge of $19 a month and you'll receive this Wounded Warrior Project blanket.
Wounded Warrior Project, all I can really say is thank you. Thank you for being there and giving me something to achieve.
Say a prayer for peace.
Yeah, that's a very touching thing, and I do encourage people to go to that and definitely to donate. Michael really ably covered the fake controversy that went on in the media this week. So kind of the beginning of my blog was a little bit about that. So I'm not really going to cover that. What I really would love people to do is to go to wepickrick.net and if you put my name in, you'll see it, Becca Lower, and take a look at this blog. And basically I called it Do You Hear Him Now? Mainstream Media. And I try to break down what the senator said on this week's show last Sunday, because it just really doesn't get out to the media. And I just want to read a little bit of what he had said, especially about Afghanistan, and it just kind of fits in with the PSA there. And it seems just rare, very, very rare that on these shows that Rick does get questions about anything but social issues or like I said, some kind of fake controversy. But he was actually asked about Afghanistan. It looks like Newt Gingrich had some sort of opinion about it, and so they were trying to get him to give an opinion different from Newt or something. But basically, Jonathan Carl, who was the fill-in moderator, asked Rick about the terrible week that had happened in Afghanistan and gave Newt's opinion, and then asked what he would do about the operation there. And here's just a part of what Rick said. He said, "The bigger issue is the policy of this administration. The policy is to do something, does something you simply can't do if you want to win a war, especially against a guerrilla insurgent force, and that's to give them hope that they can survive. That's what this president has done from day one when he came into office, when he put in a timeline for us to leave Afghanistan. Once you give a timeline, you give the enemy an objective to hold on, to bunker down, if you will, and survive without whatever onslaught the United States is putting forth. And the other problem is you have these actors in the region from Pakistan to the Afghans who are opposing the Taliban. They realize the United States isn't going to be there to finish the job and that they're going to have to deal with the Taliban afterwards. So you've created an untenable position or situation." And so in some respects, he said, "I agree with Congressman Gingrich. If this is the game plan, if the game plan is we're leaving irrespective of whether we're going to succeed or not, then why are we still there? Let's either commit to winning or let's get out." And I just thought that that was, you know, it was really important for him to kind of get that message out about what Obama is doing and about just the, just kind of appeasement and the way that the administration just is not standing up to Afghanistan, is not really dealing with it as a leader, and that Rick definitely can do that. So I wanted to mention that. Now I do want to bring in J.C. Hagan, and J.C. is some of you may know.
I'm sorry. Before you bring, go ahead and say your thing for J.C., but say okay, Michael, now and then because I have.
Okay, very good. Okay. Now, as some of you may know, J.C. Hagan, and he has a friend, Corey. They do have conservativestats.com. It's a great blog that takes a look at all the polls, people like Rasmussen and, you know, the CNN polls, all the major polls, the PPP polls, and they break them down. They take a look at how it does affect the Sandstorm campaign, affects all the campaigns going forward. And I do want to make sure that people do know right now, Michael.
Right now?
Yeah, JC.
All right.
And Corey.
The great BBG.
Rick Santorum in Tampa, Florida.
Yeah. JC, what do you think about that intro?
Not bad.
The new conservative stat segment with J.C. Hagan on Sandstorm's patriotism. J.C., my brother, how's it going?
Oh, not too bad. Just had the primary in Illinois last week. I was pretty busy with that, being from downstate Illinois. So I haven't really gotten too much of a chance to blog because I was just so busy hosting events and doing everything for Sandstorm. I was privileged to be the deputy state director in Illinois for the Sandstorm campaign, and it just meant a lot of work. So had all that going on. So I haven't really been blogging much lately, but we're going to start getting back into it. Corey just put one out this morning talking about the inevitability of Romney. And it's not looking good. He may very well win the primary, but he's going to do so by only winning Democrat states. I think right now he's only won three of his 16 states are Republican. I mean, the base is just not there with him, and that's going to be a problem going into the general election, is there's just lack of enthusiasm among the base.
Mm-hmm. Now, before you get into your different stats, J.C., do you have anything for Adam Teichel or Adam vice versa? Did you either of you want to say something before he kind of gets into what Illinois means and going forward?
Not really on my end.
Really on my end either. I mean, I'm happy to just sit back and listen to what you guys are saying statistically, or analyzing this as we get towards a brokered convention, I think that the popular vote here is quite clear, and if we can push through and get to a brokered convention, I think that Santorum has the power, the ability to really push through and beat Obama. The trick is going to be to get to that next step and to get to that convention. It's going to be a challenge.
Yes, it will be a challenge. Things are looking pretty good for Romney right now, but not good enough. I just don't see how he's going to get to the 1144. I just don't see it being there. Not with states like Arkansas, Indiana, even Montana, South Dakota could go. Kentucky, West Virginia should be with us. Texas, we're up 20 points in Texas. I just don't see how he's going to get the number.
I agree.
But what we saw yesterday in Louisiana and what we saw last week in Illinois, it's the same thing I've been seeing everywhere. The cities, the Democrat strongholds go for Romney because all he can get is Republicans who don't know how to win vote for him. And Republicans who do know how to win in the rural areas vote for Santorum. You know, there just happen to be more Republicans who don't have a clue than those who do. And that's what's hurting us.
That's an accurate description.
he only won one parish in Louisiana, Orleans Parish, which is a Democrat stronghold. It's like Cook County in the South. And it's as corrupt as can be. It's overrun with Democrats. The Republicans are probably Democrats who just couldn't find a position in the Democrat Party, so they decided to become Republicans just to have some power, which is exactly what goes on in a lot of these cities like Cleveland and Chicago and Detroit. It's the Democrats who just want to have some sort of position but can't do it within their own party. And then they go and vote for Romney. It seems like that's the way it's going to play out everywhere. California is probably going to end up that way. We're going to take Texas, split the big two states, and we're going to fight over places like Indiana, Wisconsin, and New Mexico. New Mexico is going to be a real fight. It's a Democrat state, but they have a Republican governor. There's a big influence from Texas. That's going to be a real telling state, see who takes that. Wisconsin, the same way. There's a strong establishment feel to Wisconsin as being a Democrat state, and then Rents Priebus coming from there. But if Santorum can jump on the Scott Walker bandwagon, we can get a lot of that enthusiasm over to us. From what I'm hearing and seeing, it looks like they're packing the house every time Santorum's up there, which is a good sign. Now it's just a matter of making sure our people turn out. And the 55-1 that Romney is spending against them doesn't hurt us too bad. Romney's very good at depressing the vote. You run negative ads not to get people to vote for you, but not vote for your opponent. And that's been working for him so far. He's been depressing the vote so low that people who would normally probably have voted for Santorum, the little old ladies who are rather conservative, would probably vote for him, but then they hear all this bad stuff about the mean man, and they don't show up. And it's just going to be whether or not that works everywhere or not.
Well, what does that say about Romney, though, JC? Because, I mean, I've been on the Romney board a little bit. I mean, I try to be cordial and polite to, and asking serious questions because I really want to understand the mentality of the average Romney voter. And, I mean, I read this morning one of them said something to the effect of Santorum and Gingrich folks not being conservative. And are these people really that stupid, or are they just as vigorous about supporting their candidate as we are? Because surely these folks cannot in any way, shape, or form see – I mean, look, set aside the fact – and I'm being intellectually honest here – set aside the fact of who I support. Set aside the fact that I am a for a lack of better terms, a fiscal evangelical, though I'm not an evangelical, conservative. But that's who I line up with, okay? That's how I feel. And for these folks to tell me that my that I'm not a conservative, that their guy is the conservative, I want to laugh in their face. Are they that stupid, or are they just supporting their candidate?
Kind of both. What you got to remember is there are going to be those who stick their necks out and support someone, and those who stick their necks out and support Romney are going to believe everything, and they're going to be diehard for him. But what you can look at is state by state, and you know, I'll use Illinois as an example just because of intimate knowledge of it. The Illinois for Santorum Facebook group has 184 members. The Illinois for Mitt Romney group has 35. The people who actually care and get involved are much more on the Santorum side. Romney's only hope is to get the ignorant vote, people who don't pay attention until the day before, those who are swayed by TV commercials, those who go and vote just because, oh, I recognize that name, or, oh, so-and-so endorsed this person, this must be who I should support.
I think the media is doing a disservice to Santorum, and they keep repeatedly bringing up the fact that wealthy people will only support Romney, and that Romney's camp is that consists of, you know, wealthy folks, and that the ignorant people are the ones that support, the poor ignorant people are the ones that support Santorum. It's really frustrating to keep hearing the liberal media pinpoint Santorum as that candidate, as I don't see that as true at all. But yet the media somehow keeps buying into that and making people believe that. It's very frustrating.
Yeah, it is. And you look at the exit polls in Louisiana. People with college degrees voted for Santorum. Those with postgraduate degrees voted for Romney. You know, the high school educated and the college educated stuck with Santorum, and those who have doctorates and stuff voted for Romney. I think there becomes a point when you get overeducated and you start thinking that a government can solve any problem. And those who, you know, might not have a doctorate or a JD or a master's are probably a little more self-sufficient and can think, well, I can do this myself. I don't need no government to take care of it for me. And those are who support their conservatives.
Well, it really just boggles my mind. I mean, you know, I can understand some of the banter that I've had with Newt supporters. I'm still a little discombobulated at this point with their fuzzy math. But I understand their support. I really do. And, you know, I mean, even Newt yesterday admitted that he's not going to get the 1144. It ain't going to happen. His reason for staying in now is he simply is wanting to stick it to Newt. And rather than going about it from the angle of being, you know, look, Newt is one of those people that's got a big head. He's got a big melon sitting on his shoulders, and there's a huge brain in there. And he doesn't see himself in a, I mean, you know, let's be one of our guys, Eric Erickson, I believe, wrote a great blog piece about Newt being a kingmaker. Not that we need Newt to make, you know, to be the kingmaker of Rick, but you know what? If we got to appease his ego, that would be the way to go about it. But these folks on the Romney side, I mean, these people have just totally ignored and refused to look at the facts of his record over the last two decades, or they're just truly ignorant people. And I refuse to believe they're ignorant.
Well, a lot of them, you know, they'll argue disingenuously that, oh, he's a conservative, or, oh, Mike Lee endorsed him, so he's got to be a conservative. And they know that's a bunch of crap, but it's just the way they have to argue in order to justify their own
weak
position.
I truly believe that they're endorsing him just because they think that he can win the nomination,
exactly.
Not because they support anything that he believes in or they believe that he actually has any sort of conservative base or views. I just believe that they think that he can win simply. And
well,
that's the only reason they're going to support him.
That has to be it, because the fact of the matter is, as JC just said, the man has not campaigned on anything he did as governor, because he has no conservative record.
Well, how can you campaign on taking Massachusetts from number 16 in job creation to number 47 in job creation, drawing the blueprints for Romney, for Obamacare through Romneycare?
Well,
and there's something for him to run on. But going back to why people support him, in exit poll after exit poll in every state, those who care first and foremost about beating Obama vote for Romney because the media tells them to. Those who actually want someone with good moral character, want a true conservative, or care more about values, they vote for Santorum. It's just everyone, we have been conditioned by the media that, oh, we have to win. We have to win. And it doesn't matter what about the values. And we've been told that Romney's the one who can win. Well, why would the liberal media be telling us Romney's the one who can beat Obama when they don't want anyone to beat Obama? They know how weak he is. And that's my problem. And we're just, our voters, our Republican voters, just don't take the time to really look at it and find out what's really going on. One thing that's really been bothering me with Romney is uncovered a video from back in 2002 where Romney was quoted saying, "My only connection to the Republican Party is my voter registration." Now, he wasn't even claiming to be a Republican other than just saying he's Republican. That is the definition of a rhino.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, this man is the epitome. Look, I want to stipulate that I'm not saying this because I support Santorum. It wouldn't matter who I'm supporting, Gingrich, Paul, or Santorum, because it wouldn't be Romney. Because the truth, this man is worse than John Kerry when it comes to having been on both sides of every issue.
He's not just been on both sides, one and then the other. He goes back and forth all the time.
Like a seesaw.
I think that Santorum's camp needs to focus on how amazing he is instead of focusing its efforts on how horrible Romney is. Because if Santorum's camp can show the public how amazing he is in terms of what he's done for the Republican Party and the conservative movement, instead of really focusing on how little Romney's done, I think it will take them to a further place.
Except that's what we've been doing. You look at Illinois, for example. All Santorum did was talk about himself. He did 3 robocalls talking about himself, while Romney did 13 or 15 robocalls attacking.
Negative.
Romney won. Negative work, and Santorum's not doing it. I think it's time that we actually try it, because what we've been doing, the positive, is not working.
Well, guys, I do have a caller that would actually like to speak a little bit about the voters and kind of some of the stats that you've been talking about, JC. And that's Brenda Ward. She's one of our hosts of Women Patriots here on Conservative Nation Radio. Brenda, what did you have to say?
Well, guys, you're missing part of the picture here, because I actually work for a group of doctors who are Republicans. They're not necessarily conservative social issues, but they're conservative fiscally, so they vote Republican, and these people vote Romney because they think Romney, with his business experience, is the one to win. They don't think the social issues can win it. They don't pay attention to the news because they're at work every day, so the news that they do get is minimal, and they feed into this. This is where you're seeing the people over $100,000 a year vote Romney. These are those people. And we've got to convince the Republican base to get out and vote. It's what we got to do to beat Romney. But it's not that they're ignorant, Michael. They're not ignorant. They just don't care about the social issues. So they're not conservative on the social issues. They're just conservative on the business issues. And since he was a businessman, they think Romney would be a good president. So that's some of what we're fighting. And I'm talking from personal experience. I've got, like I said, I work for these doctors, and they just look at me like I'm goofy when I say I'm voting for Santorum. Or they see my little sticker on my bumper. I have a bet riding on this because, you know, I vote with my heart and my conviction. And one of the doctors I work for, he's actually an atheist, but he's still a Republican because he's a fiscal conservative. And so we have a dinner bet riding on this, you know, going to a brokered convention, you know, or Santorum winning. But this is a perspective you're missing. And it's not that they're not ignorant people. They're not stupid people. They just don't care about the social issues. They don't think you're going to win running on the social issues. And they don't really pay all that much attention to the day-to-day racing and what Romney is actually saying or doing to win. So it's a problem.
Well, I think there is a bit of ignorance in it, in that Santorum has a very good fiscal policy,
yes,
but no one's paying attention to it.
Right.
And Romney is claiming to be just as socially conservative as Santorum is, although the media only covers social with Santorum.
And that's
so
the problem.
So it is a bit where they're not paying attention.
And that's
I'm not saying
the problem.
They're stupid. They're ignorant of it.
Right, they're not paying attention.
They don't take the time.
Because they don't think he can win because they're listening to the news.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't think, you know, they don't pay attention to his policy because the news always brings up the social issues. So, again, they're working. They're working every day, Monday through Friday. You know, they're only off on the weekends. And so they're not going to necessarily spend their time in front, you know, researching these topics. So the news that they're getting is always the biased news that's coming from the media. So, it's hard, but that's Romney's core 30%. You know, that's Romney's core support is those people in the Republican Party or fiscal conservatives. Even when he was polling early on, you know, he always polled about 27-30%, and those are those people, just because they liked him before and they like him now, and no matter what you say, it's probably not necessarily going to change. But Santorum, what he does is when he goes out and if you go to one of his rallies. And you listen to him talk. That's when he convinces people to vote for him, because you get to see the real man, and you get to see what he's really all about, which is about we the people. It's not about government, and we want less government. Romney's going to give us the same big government we got because he has the same money connections that all the people in Washington have. So if you truly want change, you truly want difference in Washington, you know, you can't vote for Mitt Romney. Because he's not going to bring that change about, because the $72 million that he's blown through already is coming from these same people that are backing Obama, and they back, you know, all the establishment candidates. And Rick Santorum doesn't have that. Rick Santorum doesn't have any of the establishment backers that Romney has, and there's a reason for that. There was a reason he got voted out in 2006, and it was because of his conservative principles, and there's an agenda in this country that is trying to push the social agenda to the left, and so they had to get rid of people like Senator Santorum in 2006. And now what you're seeing now with the people coming out in numbers from the counties are the conservative, or the social conservatives. So just my two cents.
Michael.
Hello.
I'm sorry. I'm sitting here chatting away, talking to all of y'all, and my mute button's on.
Oh.
But thank you very much. You know, and you're right, Brenda. I probably cast aspersions on the Romney supporters more so than I need to, and sometimes I need to take a dose of my own medicine and try to, like I did yesterday morning, and do more of the outreach, you know, from the, you know, as my grandmother always said, you catch more flies with honey than you do with vinegar.
Mm-hmm.
But it boggles my mind sometimes. But listen, hey, Becca, I think we should probably, guys, were you all, Adam, JC, are you in a hurry? Adam, you guys, we need to bring in our next guest, Stephen, and then I have... our Alabama state coordinator, Debbie, who's going to come on and do the leader segment. And then we have our show is famous for, what that we do that is different from all the rest. Well, Brenda does something similar, and Billy does, but we like to round table. We like to open up the mics and do round table. That's when I like to pull in everybody that's sitting here. So do you guys have a few minutes? Can you hang tight with us?
Yeah, I can hang tight for a few minutes, definitely.
Okay, cool.
I'm going to go. I have a client meeting, so.
Okay. All right, Jason.
Still to go.
All right, Jason, next week, same time, buddy. How did you like your intro song, by the way? You want me to find something different for you?
You know, B.B. King is great, but Chicago is Chicago.
I'll put some work into it. I've got a good intro for Debbie. I'll find something better for you. But I appreciate it. As always, we enjoy conservative stats and conservative nation radio shows getting together and doing this on Sundays, my friend.
All right. Thanks, Sammy, and I'll look forward to coming back next week.
All right, buddy. And give Corey our best.
I will do.
Bye. Thanks. Hey, Becca, you there, buddy? Becca. Oh, Becca. Becca's on hold. All right. Hey, so.
I have myself on hold. I didn't even realize.
I know.
I hate when that happens.
Yeah, I do it all the time. Hey, listen, we need let's go ahead and what do you think, buddy? Let's bring in our next guest.
Well, you're going to play a PSA first, right?
I want to do a one-minute PSA, then I'll let you introduce our next guest, and then after our next guest, I have an intro for Debbie, who's going to do our leader segment, and then we'll go into roundtable and we'll open up the mic. So all of you that are sitting there on hold, please be patient. We are a three-hour show, by the way, now. So we've got plenty of time.
Go ahead, Patriot.
Right. I'm on another tangent, aren't I?
Mm-hmm.
I believe that abortion should be safe and legal in this country.
I will preserve and protect a woman's right to choose and am devoted and dedicated to honoring my word in that regard.
I am pro-life and favor that legislation.
You will not see me wavering on that or be a multiple choice. Thank you very much.
You can go back to YouTube and look at what I said in 1994. I never said I was pro-choice, but my position was effectively pro-choice. I've said that time and time again.
We do have tough gun laws in Massachusetts. I support them.
I support the Second Amendment. I purchased a gun when I was a young man. I've been a hunter pretty much all my life.
Small varmints, if you will.
Look, I was an independent during the time of Reagan Bush.
It's time for Republicans to start acting like Republicans.
I'm not trying to return to Reagan Bush.
There you go, folks. That's and I just thought it was appropriate after the roundtable that we just had. We'll go into that some more. Maybe Mr. Brown has something he'd like to say to that. I don't know. That was the John McCain ad from 2008 that they conveniently tried to hide now, but yours truly has a copy of it.
Good job, Patriot.
Anyway, go ahead, buddy.
I'm going to go ahead and bring our guest in. Okay. Now, everyone, I'd ask you to give a very, very warm Soldiers of the Patriot welcome to our next guest. Stephen Brown is a native of Charleston, South Carolina, and a graduate of Baltimore's Johns Hopkins University, where he received his BA in political science. He's also a graduate of the University of South Carolina School of Law with a Juris Doctorate. And he also is a former naval officer, having proudly served in the United States Naval Reserve. Stephen's a Greenville attorney who specializes in labor and employment law in South Carolina. He is a lifelong conservative activist, and he started his volunteer efforts for Ronald Reagan in the 1976 presidential primary in New Hampshire. Stephen's been a leader working to further the conservative agenda of responsible limited government by serving as state chairman of the Maryland Federation of College Republicans, chairman of the Greenville County Republican Party, member of the South Carolina Republican Party Platform Committee, and a delegate to the Republican National Convention in 1996 and 2000. He currently serves as legal counsel for the Republican Party on a case pending in federal court, leading to the charge to close the Republican primaries in the Palmetto State to prevent Democrats and others from having a hand in the selection of their Republican Party nominees for public office. I do welcome Stephen Brown to Soldiers of Patriotism. How are you doing today, Stephen?
I'm great, Beck. I'm glad to be with you this afternoon.
Thank you. Definitely, you have the floor if you can talk a little bit about conservatism, talk a little bit about, you know, goodness gracious, being at the convention, and, you know, perhaps, you know, I definitely am very interested, I'm sure the listeners are interested in your efforts there in South Carolina about
sure.
the, having the closed elections there.
Well, absolutely. You just played, Michael played that quote from Romney from a few years back, where he was distancing himself from Reagan and Bush, talking about the fact that, he, Romney, was some sort of an independent. I think he said during the Reagan-Bush years, didn't want to go back there. That anybody that would say those types of things, that disqualifies them, as far as I'm concerned, and as far as being a Republican Party nominee. And that's, and not only did that disqualify Romney, I also had issues with that for the governor of Texas when Rick Perry was running, because he was not a Reagan-Bush guy. He was a Democrat back in those days. And I've been a Ronald Reagan Republican going back to 1976. I was a teenager at the time, but was glad to be part of that effort that was ultimately unsuccessful that year, but laid the foundation for Reagan to be nominated in 1980. And I was actually at that convention in Detroit, Michigan in 1980, but I was not a delegate at that time. I was one of the youth leaders for Ronald Reagan. But over these years, I was active in the Republican Party for many years, doing all those things that you mentioned and many others. But I really became terribly disappointed with the Republican Party after we had the presidency in both houses of Congress, because here I was, after working so many years to accomplish these goals as a conservative activist, I was so disappointed by what the Republicans did and what they failed to do, both. And quite frankly, I became very disillusioned with the Republican Party, and it wasn't until after the Obama election and the rising of the Tea Party I said, maybe there are enough other people out there to think like I do that really can make an effort to change the direction of the Republican Party and then alter the direction of our nation. So that's what has really re-energized me in these last few years, and that's why I'm so engaged right now in this process to hopefully get us to initially a brokered convention, and then Rick Santorum, hopefully, as our Republican Party nominee.
That is what we want. That is definitely
Absolutely.
Our goal, everybody that's on this call. You know, we
well,
all
Stephen,
definitely want to.
Stephen, this is Michael. I just want to jump in. You know, interestingly enough, and I, you know, I'm 48. So 76, I was in junior high school. I remember it well. Obviously, high school. I was in high school when Jimmy Carter was president and was driving
right.
and had to go to the gas station.
Right.
But I was just reading the other day, interestingly enough, of what has happened in Texas because of our redistricting. And you probably heard me talking about it earlier in the program. You know, as any state should, we hold true. And it's never much of a problem for us in Texas. Years that end in zero is the year you want your party to win. That happens all the
right.
time here. But the problem is we have a liberal judge down this time, this last time around down in San Antonio that has – Where we didn't get to vote on Super Tuesday, where we normally vote, nor
right.
did we get to vote on April 3rd. Now, we're always a proportional state. It doesn't matter when in the process we vote, we're a proportional state. God, I wished we would change that. But that being said, I was just reading the other day, it's not been, and you might can speak to this just having briefly spoken about it, 1976 in Texas was the last year that Texas was a major player in the GOP nomination. Ford was expected to win. President Reagan, the greatest president ever in my lifetime, the man that I served for when I was serving in the 82nd Airborne at Fort Bragg, North Carolina. He was my boss. Came in and did exactly what it looks like Santorum is, Senator Santorum is going to do on May 29th. Hopefully it'll be a little bit different in the end here by the time we get to the primary, as it was in 76. But this is going to – Texas is going to be a key player with 155 delegates. Now, the rules have changed, and I don't know. I can't keep up with it. I believe we have a threshold like Louisiana, but you want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, a couple things about that. I'm a few years older than you. I'm 52, but so I was in high school. In fact, I'm from Charleston, South Carolina. I went to prep school up at Phillips Exeter Academy in New Hampshire. That's how I happened to be so involved in that 76 presidential campaign for Ronald Reagan. And that's just the last time we had a very closely contested convention was 1976. If you remember, in that particular year, Ronald Reagan received more votes in the Republican primary than did Gerald Ford, but unfortunately Gerald Ford received more delegates. And just leading up to the convention, Ronald Reagan tried to swing enough of the Pennsylvania delegation by picking the Pennsylvania Senator Schweiker as his running mate. That move turned out to be unsuccessful. He did not sway enough delegates, and Ford went on to be nominated, and then, as we all know, lost the general election to Jimmy Carter. And that's the type of scenario that I hope that we can avoid. I think for our nation's future, we have to avoid that here in 2012. But as it relates to Texas, you do have that proportional delegate system. And I do not know what the threshold is in terms of getting delegates. But in most states, there's typically a threshold of about 20%, somewhere between 10 and 20%. And once you cross that threshold, you then get delegates on a proportional basis. But I can't say exactly what that proportion is in Texas. I don't know the details on that.
Right.
And what I'm engaged in here in South Carolina is a little different. When you get down into the weeds of this delegate selection process, South Carolina is one of these states where we are bound on the first ballot for the individual that either won the statewide race or your particular district. In South Carolina, Newt Gingrich won 23 of the 25 delegates. There was only one congressional district that Romney won down on the coast, the Charleston area. So Romney has two delegates from South Carolina, and Gingrich has 23. But if Gingrich were to drop out somewhere along the way, and I'm not predicting that, I don't know what his future is going to be, but if he were to drop out and release those delegates, the overwhelming number of them will go to Santorum, those 23, but probably a couple here and there will be added to Romney's total as well, because individuals are elected as delegates largely because of their involvement in the party, the way they're able to get themselves elected as delegates. I've done that a couple of times myself as a delegate. And a lot of the establishment types would be types who would be inclined to vote Romney, whereas our activist types are people who are committed and passionate about the conservative cause. Might not be in the same position to be actually elected as a delegate, because it's a very difficult thing to do. For example, in South Carolina, we only have 25 total slots, two per congressional district, and also there's a lot of competition for those spots. But if you go across the state and go across the nation, and the states have these different methods, it becomes very important in terms of who are the actual individuals that are selected. I certainly heard the Ron Paul campaign talking about that a good deal, and they're very right about the process. I think their expectations are way overblown. I think they overblow their influence quite substantially. But the concept about the significance of the delegate selection process is critical, and that's what we're engaged in now, so that we can hopefully send enough Santorum delegates to this convention so that we can accomplish what we're after once we get there. That's what we're engaged in at this particular moment. There was also some mention about our efforts to close our primary in South Carolina. What we have in South Carolina, which is different from many other states, we don't have Republicans in South Carolina, nor do we have Democrats. All we have are registered voters. Nobody is registered as anything other than just a registered voter, and that's it. And so if a particular party is going to have a primary, whether it's the Democratic primary or Republican primary or any other party's primary, you can vote in any party's primary in any given election. You just cannot vote in the other party's primary if they're having one on the same day. But, for example, when we had the presidential preference primary here that Gingrich won, the Democrats didn't have a primary. So every single registered voter in the state of South Carolina could vote, and many of them did. And it didn't matter whether they were Democrats or independents, they could still vote in the Republican Party primary. Now, as it turns out, I don't think they had a very big sway on the outcome because Gingrich won in a pretty overwhelming victory in South Carolina. But they certainly could have a big sway, and I think they did back in prior years. So, for example, in 2008, there were only 450,000 people who voted in the Republican primary in South Carolina for president that year because Clinton and Obama were engaged in a very difficult Democratic primary. And in South Carolina, there were many, many more people voted in the Democratic primary than the Republican primary, even though South Carolina is such a red state. But this year, with no Democratic primary to pull them over, everybody voted in the Republican Party primary, and obviously what we're trying to do is avoid the influence of the moderating force, whether they be independents or Democrats, helping to select Republican Party nominees.
I'm sorry. I was listening to you, Stephen. At the same time, I was looking for a book because you said something that reminded me of a book that I just recently finished reading. It's written by Tom Pawkin, who is our workforce commissioner here in, or was in, here in Texas. It's a great book he wrote called Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back. And we, you said something about who was it that, you know, I wasn't paying attention in 76, apparently you were. Who was it that Ronald Reagan chose at that time was going to be, who did you, the senator from Pennsylvania?
Pennsylvania, Schweiker. His name, Schweiker.
Okay, and then of course we know about the backroom deals, and we know what happened in 80 and how George H.W. Bush became the VP nominee in all of that. And Mr. Paukin writes about that in here. I'm trying to find that quote in this book. I'd underlined it. I've got so much stuff underlined because this is a great book. But it talks about he says here, our first goal must be to recapture a Republican Party that has been taken over by Machiavellian pragmatists and neoconservative ideologues masquerading as Reagan conservatives. Well, he goes on to talk about how the death of the Reagan movement was the very choice he made in H.W.
See, I agree with that. I was there. Like I said, I was one of the Youth for Reagan leaders there in 1980. I absolutely agree with that premise. I was one of these young, crazy kids in college at the time waving the Reagan Kemp signs. Now, Jack Kemp might have become a little more liberal later, but certainly in 1980, Jack Kemp was considered one of the conservative stalwarts. And all of us as solid conservatives in 1980 wanted to see Reagan Kemp. We wanted no part of George H.W. Bush for many reasons, including his comments about voodoo economics. And there were all kinds of comments he made during the primary about how Reagan was too conservative and couldn't win and one thing after the next. But the deal was made, which in hindsight, of course, we can certainly see wasn't necessary because Reagan won in a landslide, and I'm confident he would have won in been overwhelming numbers with or without George H.W. Bush. But the bottom line is we did sow the seeds of the demise of the conservative control of the Republican Party in that selection, and that was very troubling. And this battle's been going on my entire adult life. And, in fact, as I've said, I became very discouraged by the Republican Party. And specifically, I mean, you look at Medicare Part D, that was adopted by a Republican-controlled Congress with a Republican president. The biggest social program we'd adopted in years, thanks to the Republican Party. And then really the straw that broke the camel's back for me and many others here was the effort to give amnesty to illegal aliens that was being pushed by President George W. Bush, John McCain, Lindsey Graham, and others. And that's when a guy that not many people had heard that much of up until that time, but became a big hero to many of us, and that's where Jim DeMint stood up. And it was his efforts that really led to the defeat of that that bill back in 2007.
I'm sorry. I know this is your segment, but you're bringing up some good stuff here. And I urge everybody to get this book by Tom Paukin. It's Paukein. It's Bringing Home America, Bringing America Home, How America Lost Her Way and How We Can Find Our Way Back Home. And you're bringing up stuff. I read this book about 6 months ago, and what you're saying is like bringing this book flooding back. So I just want to read a couple of paragraphs here because you know what I'm about to say. You're going to be able to tell me firsthand and our listeners firsthand what Mr. Paukin is writing about here. So if it's okay with you, may I?
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, he says, the groundwork for the death of the conservative movement was laid by the selection of George Herbert Walker Bush to be Ronald Reagan's vice presidential running mate in 1980. Upon Reagan's election as president, the mistake was compounded by the choice of Bush's former campaign manager, James Baker, to be the White House chief of staff. Overnight, two of the key leaders of the pragmatic or corporate liberal wing of the Republican Party were in key positions in the administration of a truly conservative president. Moreover, the White House personal office was headed up by a non-conservative Nixon-Ford retread. This made it more difficult for Reagan conservatives to get hired in the administration headed by a conservative president. The next major mistake made by the Reagan administration, which would also have long-term consequences for the conservative movement, was the appointment of many neo-conservatives to fill key political positions, particularly in foreign policy. For the most part, these were former social Democrats from the Hubert Humphrey Scoop Jackson wing of the Democratic Party who had clashed with the anti-Vietnam left-wing McGovernites during the Cold War period. Now, he goes on and he says a whole lot more, but I don't want to take up your time. But I think that wraps it up. soundly right there the death of our movement with the nomination of Bush Sr.
Well, unfortunately, that's how it has played out, and that's why we continue to have this battle, and we're seeing it here. And unfortunately, at this stage, we appear to be on the losing end. I mean, it appears that the establishment side of the party is in the driver's seat. It's my hope that as we move into these winner-take-all primaries, that perhaps Santorum will be in a position to unify the conservative base to win. I mean, unfortunately, that's not necessarily true. We look at Illinois that we just had recently. Santorum and Gingrich together would not have had enough votes to beat Romney in a case like that. You know, Romney can still go on and win the state and take all the delegates. But California is still a place, obviously, the only one that has more delegates than Texas is California. That's the type of situation where even though California is a very liberal state, the Republican Party has various conservative elements within it in California, and they have a closed primary, so the only Republicans can vote there. Those types of places, and of course there's North Carolina that's coming up. That was the key state for Ronald Reagan. That was the first state that Reagan won as he was moving forward to take over the nomination back in 76. He was ultimately unsuccessful, but won in North Carolina to lead the charge to do as he did. So there are enough places where if we are successful in unifying that conservative base behind Santorum, the thought is that if we can get that opportunity so that Romney does not garner the delegates in advance and we get to that convention where there's no clear majority for any one candidate, I think there's a good chance that the delegates there can make the right choice for America. That's what we're hoping to do.
That's great. I hope that they do too.
Cool.
I hope that you all. I'm being heartened by this conversation. Been doing a few other different things on the side, but yeah, that's where it's gone now. Is a contested broker convention is what we. What we're looking at, right? I mean,
what we're hoping for. And let me be clear about this, because I was hearing some of the other folks speak earlier. I wanted to make this point. This is not a matter of making a prediction or placing a bet, trying to win a dinner off of anybody about which way it's going to go. But we have to work to our best advantage. We have to make some assumptions. And if Romney ultimately wins it, then he ultimately wins it. Unfortunate, this is in my opinion. But we have to take the right steps now to elect the right individuals to serve as delegate in Tampa from your respective state, who can then band together to pull the right levers and make the things happen to get the right people on the Rules Committee, the right people on the Credentials Committee. See, I think there could be a big battle on the Credentials Committee in terms of who's seated. Because Florida, if you read the media reports, Romney won all the delegates because it's the winner-take-all state, and he clearly won Florida. But they jumped the gun in terms of where they held their primary. There's been a protest filed because they shouldn't have all the delegates going to just the winner. So there are a number of issues like that where there will be battles over where these delegates are going to go, and there are many battles yet to be fought.
Yes.
Great. I'm going to go ahead and bring Javen on as well. We do have Javen, your friend Javen Browder, on the phone as well, and I did ask him to give a call in. And he definitely especially wanted to be on during your segment. So I'll go ahead and bring Javen in. Javen, welcome to the Soldiers of Patriotism again.
Thank you.
Hey, Javen, how's it going, buddy?
Doing well. Me and Steven are like two bad pennies. We always show up together.
That's true, always true, yeah. That's right.
Yeah, I wish we had a little something to celebrate today. This is really a huge win in Louisiana. Of course, the media is not reporting it. My father called me a little while ago and was like, "What, you know, did Santorum win? What was the percentage?" He heard he won. He said, "What are the percentages?" And all I say, "What in a landslide? Come on, you know."
Yeah.
Said, you know, from what he's seeing, nothing's being covered on it. And, you know, it would be a little different story if it had been a Romney win.
Unfortunately, that's true. The media is not giving it the attention it deserves. But the other unfortunate piece is just the delegate selection process. Santorum did not get as many delegates out of Louisiana as you would think he would deserve based on the margin of victory. That's part of the problem.
Right.
Well, and Romney he only got, if I'm not mistaken, Louisiana is it's 25% threshold. You have to have 25% of the vote in order to get any delegates. He got 27%. So what did he get?
He had five delegates.
So that 2% gave him five delegates. Now here's what about
Mike? It doesn't work that way. You need the 25% threshold to get any. So in other words, if you got 20% of the vote, you get zero delegates. But once you cross the 25% threshold, you get 25% of the delegates. So in this instance, with 20 delegates, Romney gets five, and Santorum's getting 10, and five are still uncommitted is the way that's working out there. So
okay. Well, they've got 46 delegates in Louisiana. So would the rest of those be determined at primary? I'm sorry, at the convention?
My understanding is it's five for Romney, 10 for Santorum, five uncommitted, and I believe the five uncommitted, I think that means they just get to go to the convention, you know, and cast the vote as they see fit without being committed to anybody leading up to it.
I see.
So I would think there would be a good, and see, again, that comes down to the individuals that you elect. In Louisiana, there's some human being has to fill that slot as to one of those five uncommitted delegates. And if you elect a person who is a Santorum supporter from Louisiana, then Santorum will get that vote, and obviously the same thing's true if they elect a Romney guy. Bottom line is, in Louisiana, I think there's a very good chance there'll be good Santorum folks that get nominated. That's the same type of thing we're trying to do here, to fill these slots with people who would support Santorum. Even though we have to vote for Gingrich on the first ballot, if Gingrich drops out, you know, before the convention, or for that matter, even afterwards, we would hope that we'd be able to get people who would fill those slots who would then move to Santorum as opposed to moving to Romney.
Well, as we speak, I'm trying to find the article. I saw our friend Colleen Newsom posted on Facebook this morning. She was reposting. Now, Colleen is from, and Debbie, when we bring her on, might be able to address this. Something about delegate issues in Louisiana. Apparently, while we won, things may not be as pretty as they seem because there's. I'd have to find the article. I don't want to speak out of turn, and I'm having a hard time finding. Cynthia Newman, here we go. Something about. Let's see if I can get it pulled up here. Something about there not being enough people to fill the delegate seats there. And I'm trying to find that article, but. Yeah, here we go. Rick Santorum cruised to victory in the Louisiana Republican presidential primary on Saturday, but still trails in a wide margin. Okay, so I don't know if this is so much about the delegates in Louisiana. Maybe I misread the article, but it seemed to me that it seemed like there was an issue there in Louisiana.
I don't know anything about that in Louisiana. It is in some other states we have the situation where Rick Santorum has not picked up as many delegates as he otherwise might have been able to because he didn't have complete sets of delegates or complete slates of delegates prior to the primary. That's happened to him in a number of places, Ohio and I think Illinois as well. I know in Ohio that happened.
For sure, yeah.
I even read something today, I don't know how accurate it was, but I did also read it and got some of the issues about having complete slates in Pennsylvania as home state. So that's just an important thing. And they vary from state to state in terms of how this works. But in the place where you actually have to have individuals named as slates, it's really critical that you're organized enough to have your people on the ballot. I mean, Virginia is an example where, you know, Santorum didn't even get on the ballot at all. Virginia would have been a very, very favorable state for Santorum had he had the opportunity to be on the ballot. But by not being organized early enough, and we all know the history of how he came out of apparently nowhere to do as well as he's done. But just by not having the money or the organization early enough, he was not able to get on the ballot in Virginia. That's the extreme example. But there are less extreme examples. Even in states where he's won the primary vote, he simply didn't have the slate of delegates that he needed to get every vote that he could have had. Anyway, that's just part of the explanation why he's as far behind as he is in the delegate count, despite the number of states that he's won.
Well, Stephen, let's talk about that for a minute, Stephen, about getting on the individual. We're all states writers, there's no doubt about it. But for a national campaign, something such as the presidential, the GOP and or the Democratic primary, what is it about the rules? Why does this have to be so damn complicated to get on the ballot? Because as far as I'm concerned, folks in Virginia were disenfranchised that weren't given the choice of all four candidates.
Well,
and to me, as a citizen, I would think that would be a legitimate court case. You know, you denied me the opportunity to vote for whom I wanted to vote.
Well, they brought a court case, you know, and it was unsuccessful, and that's how the primary race in Virginia stayed the way it was. I think I probably take the opposite position from you on this. I agree with your premise that we're all states' writers, but I mean it when I say that. And what that means is each state has the legal right, and they clearly do have the constitutional authority to determine their own election methodology. And it varies from state to state, and I would not be in favor of any kind of nationalization of that state authority to determine how they're going to elect their their nominees. And now, you know, within the state, like within South Carolina, I have real issues about what our election laws are, and I'm working very diligently, both politically and in some instances, you know, legally, to change them. But I'd be absolutely opposed to somebody in the national level imposing on us some uniform system so that we in South Carolina have to do it the same way they do it in Texas or in Virginia or Washington State. So it is, you just have to go state by state. The whole concept is each of the states is determining through whatever method they use, ultimately, you know, who they want to be their nominee for the Republican Party and also for the Democratic Party. And it is complicated, but again, if you're going to be the president of the United States, you would think that you and your staff would be able to figure out how to get on the ballots in each of the several states. So even though I'm a Santorum supporter, I don't take the position that somebody did him wrong. It's a matter of the campaigns being organized to figure out how to get it done.
True. I'll give you that. And I do concur with you. I mean, you know, though I would like to see the rules such that it's not as complicated to get on, somewhere along the line we've screwed the pooch, so to speak, as we say here in Texas, on getting on the ballot there in Virginia.
Well, you know, Virginia, it wasn't just a matter of being complicated. What it was you had to have the requisite number of signatures in each of the congressional districts. So you had to be organized enough to have your supporters in each one of the congressional districts. And off the top of my head, I don't know how many there are in Virginia. In South Carolina, we have 7, and I know Virginia has more than that, so it's probably 11 or 15 or somewhere in that range. But whatever the number is in Virginia, that you had to be organized enough to have people in each of those congressional districts that live in those districts getting the requisite number of signatures for you, and that's what the people that failed to get on the ballot failed to do. And that's just one example. And you have rules that change from state to state to state. And with the presidential campaign, clearly you have, you know, people that are looking at that go through all those, or should be going through all those processes to make sure you meet the requisite obligations to get on the ballot. But what's done is done in terms of what's behind us. But what I'm looking at is how we go forward from here to make it happen so that we, in each of these states, even those that have already voted, send the right people as delegates so that when we get to that convention, we still have the opportunity to do what needs to be done to end up nominating Rick Santorum instead of Mitt Romney. That final act is not finished yet. Despite what the media would try and tell us, it's not over yet. And that's what I'm hoping we can still do to make this thing change over the last several months. And the reason,
right.
The reason they're promoting Romney is because they want to try and still influence those people yet to vote. So many people vote for who they see as the perceived winner, and we all know that's true in life. And so there's some definite reason. That's why the media downplays what happened in Louisiana, and they really build up what happened in Illinois. And we've got to make sure that we have a more even keel as we move forward and recognize there's still an opportunity to make this happen.
Exactly, exactly. Well, you know, and you know, let me ask you, Stephen, you remember 76 pretty well. I don't. And I don't know about you, Javen, nor do I know how well Brenda remembers.
Wasn't born then, so I don't remember it.
Well, I was born, but I was more interested in, 76. I was 14, I think, 14 or 15, I don't know, somewhere along there. But anyway, that was not a brokered convention, was it, Stephen, or was it very close?
No. There's not been a brokered convention in my lifetime. I'm 52 years old. We've not had one in my lifetime. You have to go way back before them since we've had a brokered convention. But 76 was the closest we had come to it. And as I said earlier, the reason was because Reagan actually received more votes in the primary than Ford did. It was that close. But again, because of the way the establishment works, Ford was the sitting United States president. You know, all that comes into it. And Ford was able to garner more delegates than Reagan. And there was an effort, and the convention was not brokered. I mean, going into it, Ford had more delegates than Reagan. He had what he needed to be nominated, and that's ultimately what happened. But immediately prior to the convention, Reagan was trying to shake it up because there were some states, and Pennsylvania was one of them, where you were not bound by the rules to have to vote for the nominee that had won your state. So Reagan was trying to sway these Pennsylvania delegates who were technically not bound by the rules to not vote for Ford, to vote for Reagan instead. So the deal was cut, you know, we'll put your senator as our vice presidential nominee. And he did that, make that agreement to put him on as a vice presidential nominee, but he did not swing enough of the Pennsylvania delegation. It didn't work, and Ford had the delegates, and the rest is history.
Well, and I know that we conservatives tend to not be, you know, conspiracy-type people. But at the same time, here on Santorum's Soldiers of Patriotism, I do occasionally like to play that game called What If. So, without playing the what if game, do you think it will be a brokered convention. Let's just wait and see how that plays out. But let's play the what-if game, what if? Because apparently Speaker Gingrich is not going to withdraw. He's going to pull probably 10% in every state from here on out. It's going to be a battle between us and Romney. Paul's going to do what Paul does. I think there's a very strong possibility that Mitt Romney doesn't get the nominees he needs.
Well, I think he's really helped by Newt Gingrich. Here's why I have a hard time seeing how it's going to happen between now and then, because I do believe that Gingrich is most upset with Romney. But what I don't understand is why Gingrich feels he needs to stay in, because his staying in only helps Romney. If your assessment is right, your prediction that Gingrich gets 10% of the vote here on out, if you go to winner-take-all states, California being a prime example, if Gingrich takes 10% of the vote in California, there's no way that Santorum's going to beat Romney in California. Romney's going to take all the California delegates. And that's true as you go state by state. So Santorum is being hurt by Gingrich. Romney's being helped by Gingrich if Gingrich stays in. So I think it would be very difficult to stop Romney from getting the required number of delegates if Gingrich stays in all the way.
Okay.
Yeah, you guys are so right. I mean, my only hope is that someone can speak to him. Obviously, someone is talking to Newt Gingrich and telling him this, because that's what Gingrich is out saying. He's saying, I'm staying in because it hurts Romney. He can't get the delegates he needs if I stay in. But how does he not hear the voices of the people saying, but you're staying in and you're hurting your friend? This is, you know, what about Richard Viguerie? You know, what about all these great articles he's had out about the way forward? You know, it's mind-boggling.
Well, Stephen, before you or Javen answer that, let me just offer up. I don't think Newt is really all that concerned about conservatism. I really have some doubt whether or not he's even really truly a conservative. The man's got a big head, and I think it's about Newt. Where Newt is concerned, it's about himself. I don't think he could care less about conservatism. Now, and this is why I'm asking this before y'all answer. I think it's about him. If he cared about conservatism, he would do exactly what we all think he needs to do, which he's got to know deep in his heart of hearts he needs to do if he really cared about conservatism. With that, I'm going to turn it over to you two.
Yeah, I think you're preaching to the choir here with me and Steve. We met actually early on when ramblings of Gingrich rising in the polls and a lot of the Tea Party here in South Carolina began to kind of rally around him, and a lot of that was incentivized by money early on, and other people kind of began to see these endorsements and support and kind of got on the bandwagon there, and unfortunately we couldn't stop it here in South Carolina. But, we totally agree. It's not about conservatism. It's about his ego and about advancing his personal, aggrandizement, and I think there's a lot of pride involved at this point. I've had some conversations with a friend of mine who's pretty high up in the campaign here in South Carolina, and they were saying that it's kind of interesting. Apparently, a lot of the people involved that worked directly for the campaign had to sign contracts, which she was saying she would not have signed, looking back on it now, because she really had a lot of respect for Rick. And I would like to be able to come over and, do what she can to support him now. But bound by the contract, although she's no longer being paid, she still can't during this cycle really come out and say anything about the candidates or work for any other candidates. So it could be, a lot of these people who still, would jump over to Rick, publicly. A lot of these people in the campaign are not defecting because they're bound by contract and not, out actively swaying people. And, who knows, maybe some of that could actually happen. It may have some more effect, but... Yeah, it's Newt is, I'm convinced that there's something. I mean, who knows? I mean, he's almost entirely single-handedly been funded by Nelson Adelson, who's, the casino guy. He's given $25 million to a super PAC. Newt's raised very little money through his actual campaign. It's almost solely come from the super PAC. It's almost solely come from Adelson. And Adelson's even admitted, his main purpose in it, especially his second round of donations, which came way after, getting it pretty much out of the game. He's admitted that was really going more to help Romney by hurting Santorum. So it just kind of makes you wonder, who's pulling your purse strings and, what's the motivation? Maybe I wouldn't put it past Gingrich to think he's working as a double agent, take Adelson's money and still he's going to do his own thing. Who knows what's in Newt's mind, if he still can win or, if it's just about pride or he thinks he can keep anybody from winning. I mean, somebody can walk out of the convention the nominee, so...
You know, well, you know, like Romney, but there's a lot of money. There's a lot of debt. He's got a ton of campaign debt, and so you know he's taking this money to kind of cover a lot of that. I think there's a lot of reason for him to stay in and continue to try to cover his debt. You know, who knows? It's
well, that's the problem with endorsements, and I think my own governor's hamstrung by it now. You know, Stephen opened up his segment, and he mentioned Governor Perry, my governor, who was a Democrat in 76, and he was a Democrat up into the 80s.
In 88. It wasn't until 88 or 89 when he switched over. So, yeah, he was a Democrat all through the Reagan presidency, and I make a big point of that because I understand, you know, people need to change parties at some point, or some people want to, and that's fine. But if you're an adult politician during the Reagan years, and you still don't see the wisdom of what Reagan was doing, you still choose to affiliate with the Democrats, you have a lot of explaining to do if you want my support.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. Now, and you know, and not in his defense, I will say that a Democrat in Texas is a much more conservative person than in probably anywhere else in the country. But even still, he's still a Democrat. He still had to support Al Gore. But here's where I was going, and where I think because I got to listen to Governor Romney here locally in Texas. Our local guy is a guy by the name of Mark Davis on WBAP. Loved the man, and he had Rick Perry on a week or two ago, and he sounded really hamstrung. I mean, he did what he had, and to what Javen was saying, he did what he had to do because he's come out already and endorsed Speaker Gingrich. But it didn't sound – it sounded like he was just going through the motions because he had to. But where I'm going with this is the fact of the matter is even though Governor Perry's probably a lot more conservative than Newt is now – the fact of the matter is Governor Perry's got some – we conservatives here in Texas have issues with Governor Perry. I mean, this is the man that tried to ram down our throats, the Gardasil Initiative, who tried to ram down our throats the free trade route from Mexico up through the heart of Texas, up through the heart of America. I mean, we've got a hard enough problem with coyotes bringing illegals over that he wants to give them an unfettered check through our state with international trade. Forget about the eminent domain rights of taking people's land away. And you start screwing with land here in Texas, you're barking up the wrong tree.
Well, you know, it's always about your choices in these primaries. I mean, speaking for myself, whether it's in South Carolina or at the national level for president, I'm always looking for that true conservative. He or she can disagree with me on an issue here or there, but if I'm really convinced that their core conviction is such that they want limited and responsible government and truly believe in our founding documents and are working to push our nation in that direction, that's what I'm looking for. So you're always comparing one to the other. I mean, in this race, you know, I was for Michelle Bachmann initially, primarily because I believe her to be a true conservative and one that didn't have any baggage on her side. She didn't have any baggage to pull with her. She didn't vote for Medicare Part D. She didn't vote for the earmarks and various other things that other candidates have done, including Rick Santorum. And as they start falling out along the way, you're still making choices. And in my mind, Rick Santorum was by far the best candidate that was still standing after she dropped out. But as I went through that process, there were a number of those factors on Rick Perry's ledger, which led me to a candidate other than he as my choice for the Republican Party nominee. But even he would be much more suitable, in my opinion, than Mitt Romney. So we have a real battle here as conservatives to determine whether or not we're really going to have control of this Republican Party at the national level. And we've got to win this battle.
Oh, we
do.
We do.
I do want to go ahead and bring Debbie in. She's one of our Alabama leaders in the grassroots, and she had some things that are actually very pertinent to what you all are talking about. So I went ahead and brought her on a couple minutes early. So, Debbie, if you want to go ahead and add what
Hang on one second, Debbie.
Why?
All right.
Okay.
Debbie, hang on one second. I just got to get about 30 seconds of your intro.
Gotcha.
Oh,
this is from my buddy Debbie in Alabama. I wonder what it's like to be a rainmaker. I wonder what it's like to know that I made the rain. All right, Debbie, that's for you, my friend.
Pretty cool. I actually saw Matchbox 20 in Atlanta. Good show.
How's it going?
I just wanted to bring up a couple of things, numbers-wise. And this was an article that Michael Ferris put out, and it's clearly indicative of Romney not being a conservative. Romney has won 13 states, okay? Of those 13, 8 were carried by Obama in the last election, and 5 were carried by McCain. Those 5 GOP states that he did win, 3 are on the border of Utah, okay? Santorum, his 10 states, of those, 7 were carried by McCain, and 3 were carried by Obama. So what Romney is winning is he's winning those Democratic states, Massachusetts, Maine, New Hampshire, Illinois, that are Democratic states anyway. And those voters, come November, will potentially be Obama voters. So he's not accomplishing anything for a conservative movement. He's actually appealing to Democrats. And that's just so obvious in his record and in the states he's carrying. I wanted to point that out because I think that's big. I think that's a major point that he's, you know, those states he may not take those again. Rick, you know, has a crossover appeal in a lot of cases. It's like you said, conservatives are conservatives, and they're going to vote for Rick if he's the nominee. There's not going to be a question, well, he's, you know, so much like Obama, I'll just, you know, I like Obama anyway, I'll just go ahead and go with him. Number one, I would hope that anyone that voted for Obama in the past would run in the other direction at this point, you know, with hopefully intelligent people. I also had a question because I had done some research on the Republican delegation and found that in the first vote, when the delegates make their first vote, any nominee that has not carried the popular vote in 5 states, you cannot vote for them in the first vote. Okay? So what do those Newt supporters do and those Ron Paul supporters do on the first vote if we go to this brokered convention? Are they required to vote for another candidate? Can they sit back and not vote? That part didn't address. Maybe our guest knows more about that than I do.
I just recently read about what you're talking about myself, but hopefully Stephen or Javen can address that a little bit more. But yeah, from what I understand, Newt and Paul both, neither one in the first round, since neither one of them won 5 states
and won't going forward,
would not be in a floor fight.
Right. Right. So those delegates, do they sit back and not vote, or do they cast their vote for Rick?
Well, here's the thing. I do not know the answer to your question. I wish I did, but I am aware of the idea of the 5 state delegations being required to place the name in nomination. That's one of the reasons why it's so important to be able to control your nomination, you know, whichever candidate you're supporting. In my case, it's Santorum.
Of course.
And I do not know the direct answer to your question, but even if they couldn't vote, If I'm elected as a delegate from where I live here in the 4th Congressional District in South Carolina, and I'll be vying for that in a few weeks, but whether I'm elected or not, whoever's elected here, those two folks will be obligated to vote for for Newt Gingrich on the first ballot because Newt Gingrich won here. So either they will be voting for Newt Gingrich if the rules permit, or if it's interpreted along the lines of what you just suggested that they can't vote, their vote would not be counted. But either way, they're not going to go for Romney. So the idea is that's part of this idea of stopping Romney from getting the nomination from the standpoint of those votes will not be going for Romney on the first ballot. Now, if Newt Gingrich drops out or otherwise releases his delegates, then they're free to vote their own conscience. And as I was explaining here in South Carolina, most of those Newt Gingrich delegates would go for Santorum. But there
same from Alabama. Same from here.
Here there would be a few who would probably go with Romney just based on the way the establishment folks tend to get elected as delegates. But hey, Debbie, one of the points that you made, which I think goes right to the heart of everything we're about as conservatives, is the way that we view this, because many of the establishment Republicans look at the traditional model of left to right, left being the liberals and the Democrats, right being the conservatives and the Republicans, and they say the independents control the election and somebody like Mitt Romney can reach the independents better, and that's why Mitt Romney has the chance to win, and that's why they support him. I reject that view. I subscribe to the view that Rick Santorum has been espousing, and I've held that view for a very long time, and I think Ronald Reagan demonstrated it most clearly, is that the conservative who stands up for the American ideals, the basic values in our founding documents, really stands up and espouses those views. He reaches out with a clear contrast to get people of all stripes, not only our conservative Republican voters, but many others who don't take quite as active a role generally, and they're inspired by that. And I think someone like Rick Santorum, who can express those values so clearly, has a much better chance of winning the general election against Barack Obama, because a warmed-over Romney care, for example, or warmed over Obamacare, that's not going to get it done in this particular election, and it never gets it done. And that's just a matter of seeing the things differently, and that's what makes us conservatives, I believe. That's how we see those issues are so critical to winning this race.
I agree, and the thing is, I had a chance, being Alabama coordinator here, I organized an event here in Huntsville, Alabama, for Rick on 18 hours notice. Of course, couldn't release it, couldn't send, couldn't notify the media, couldn't do anything of that till we had the contracts. So basically, on a 17, 18-hour notice, I got it out there. It was estimated a crowd of 1,000 people. Okay, Rick speaks to these people. I was backstage with him the whole time, so I got a chance to spend some time with him, and he is what he appears to be. If people would just listen to him, listen to his message, and listen to his positions. And in fact, just emailed Michael some of my position-based documents. Anyone who said, I like Rick, don't know much about him, I have a document that is totally position-based, no pictures, this is what you need. This is what you need. You need to know about his record and about his positions. And talking about, reaching out to people and being fiscally conservative, Rick, what people don't realize about Rick never voted for a tax increase, and he voted for every tax cut. That's not being said. That's not being heard. Let me put it that way. It's not being heard. Now, I emphasize it in my speeches. But I don't see the media portraying that. And his voting record, and another thing, I spoke after a Romney gentleman at a straw poll here. And his one point was, Romney's never been in government. Never been in government. So he's wonderful because he's never been involved in government. My answer to that was, what's wrong with being in government for 16 years if you have a great record, a great voting record to back you up? There's nothing in the world wrong with that, and that's another thing I stressed on these documents I create, is his voting record. And I just don't understand, and of course we're dealing with the mainstream media in most cases, but it doesn't seem to get out there. It doesn't seem to be heard.
That is a great point, Debbie. That is absolutely brilliant. And if you have any way of mentioning that to the campaign, I think exactly the way you said it could be the way that, a spokesperson or even Rick himself could say it. Is say, look, Governor Romney is saying, I was in the Congress for this amount of time. What's wrong with that?
There's nothing wrong with it.
Right, but
nothing wrong. If
agreeing.
Your voting
right.
record backs you up, there's mm-hmm. nothing wrong with it. And we don't, and so many people don't get to see Rick himself and his family.
Yeah.
And I like to tell this story because it just shows the frugality of Rick and his family, and that he knows about how to stretch a dollar. And I feel like he will handle our money in the same way. I was backstage mm-hmm. with Elizabeth. She introduced him, and then she came on backstage, cutest little sweater dress and boots, and it was just as cute as it could be. She just looked so cute. So I said, oh, that is just cut such an cute dress. And her response was, oh, I got it at Marshall's. Not Neiman Marcus. So, you know, it wasn't a Valentino. I got it at Marshall's. So they're so down to earth and they're so American. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, just that point, they know what it's like to work and watch their money. And I think Romney has no concept of this whatsoever.
I wrote a piece, blog piece, kind of covering the Louisiana thing last night. I ended it in a lot more general terms. I spoke specifically about that. But if you look, I mean, certainly Rick is sweeping across the South, and you think, well, he's a, you know, a Pennsylvania, you know, what a lot of people here in the South might call a Yankee. And you got two Southerners in the race, you know, you got, or technically Southerners, so, you know, Gingrich and Ron Paul from Texas. And, you know, saying the fact that he's winning, you know, 49% of the vote in a Southern state, you know, a deep South state. You know, it's not about are you one of us in the sense, you know, are you from our region with Rick Santorum. It's because he is one of us as a conservative and he holds those values. And, you know, I talked about how in Alabama where Mitt Romney was obviously pandering with his cheesy grits, y'all thing, you know, and it was also obviously
he panders
fake.
Everywhere he goes. And that's
absolutely
a big problem I have with him. And I respect, and that's one thing, I have so many friends. I've spent a long time in Atlanta before I returned to Alabama. And I had so many friends that are New Yorkers or who were raised in Connecticut. And the reason those people were my closest friends is because they meant what they said and they said what they meant.
Absolutely.
And I knew exactly what I was getting when they spoke out of their mouth. I knew they meant what they said. And I can appreciate that. And while as I, being from Georgia, know Newt much too well, he's another one that will actually say whatever he has to say. And I'm with Michael on this. The fact of him not getting out is pure ego. It's pure ego. Nothing more, nothing less. And
yeah,
I mean,
to your point about how there's nothing wrong with having been in the legislature, in this case the Congress, you know, as long as your voting record backs it up, I think your point is well made. But one of the problems that we have in this instance for Santorum, though, is that during those years, the Republican Party, the Republican leadership was out there wandering in the desert, really unanchored to its conservative base. And unfortunately, there were a number of situations where Rick Santorum, like you mentioned in one of the debates, you know, took one for the team because it's a team sport. And so then Romney's able to pick up on individual votes, which really weren't conservative because the Republican leadership was pushing the nation in the wrong direction. And then Rick's trying to have to explain, you know, taking it for the team in that instance. And that's not a picking on Rick Santorum, it's just pointing out that the Republican Party as a whole moved in the wrong direction. And when Rick was part of that leadership in the Senate, you know, he got tied up in some of those things. And Romney, who's obviously far more liberal than Rick Santorum ever wanted to be or ever thought about being, Romney's picking on individual votes and trying to make a mountain out of a molehill. And that's part of the problem that Santorum's had to deal with through this primary campaign.
Exactly. I know he spoke on Neil Cavuto. I can't pronounce the man's name, Cavuto, the other day. And it was about this Etch-a-Sketch comment, which originally came from the Romney camp. He repeated it, and we know it all got blown out of proportion. And he was responding to that by phone. And I was glad to hear him almost get angry. I mean, he basically said, "Are you really serious?" I mean, he basically asked Cavuto, "Are you really serious? Are you even asking me this?" And then Foster Freeze came after him, and I loved the statement he made. He made a single statement. Foster was very calm, and he answered a few questions. And they asked him why he continued to support Santorum with the, quote, numbers he's getting, that type of question. And Foster simply said, "I support a conservative nominee, number one, that reflects my values. And in my opinion, Mitt Romney is simply running to get into the White House, whereas Rick Santorum is running to save this country." I love that quote by him. He's so on point.
Beautiful.
It was so on point, and it was the exactly right answer at exactly the right moment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very true.
Okay. I do have to really briefly make an announcement. This is a very special announcement about Call From Home, because I do know we have, this is kind of our our grassroots hour. And Allison, who is our contact for Call From Home, did ask me to make this announcement, and I've agreed to be a part of it. I'm not a very competitive person by nature, but anything to help the grassroots is what I'll do. So here's what the announcement is. This is in the Call From Home group, and anybody can read it and take part. And basically what it says is announcement, our first Call From Home challenge. We have a team Glenn Cordelli versus a team Becca Lower. The challenge starts Monday and goes through Tuesday night. Each will have a phone bank labeled with their team. So to be a part of this first challenge, you send an email to Allison, that will help you do that. And you just go to just her name, Allison, at ricksantorum.com, and just get that out, and you put that up on your wall, on your just any of the closed state groups that you're in, any of the closed.
We're up at 400 on Conservatives for Santorum now. We're larger than any other national group other than Team Santorum.
I will post it
out there, and I will go ahead and sign up for your team, Becca.
Thank you so much. Not that Glenn probably has a great team. You know, I'm sure it would be wonderful, but we're the team that's going to win. So
we are going to do it.
No, wait a second. So you're saying you only got to give your support to the winner now, Becca? Isn't that kind of contradictory to what we're saying when we go?
Well,
shouldn't we all support Romney based on your logic, Becca?
Oh, no.
Here's the thing. No. Here,
we don't
want to
be insulted
Debbie,
now.
Debbie, I can explain this. I can explain this to you. Sir, the grassroots people that are going to be on my team are going to be the hardest working people, the people that don't sleep, they don't eat, and they don't watch TV. They don't even stop to make a sweet tea, okay? That's how serious this is. They go.
That's me. I do nothing but work for Rick day and night till it's time to go to sleep in the evening.
Hey, guys.
I used to live in the Triangle, so I know about sweet tea, okay? I'm not just some Yankee that just says.
I don't do sweet tea.
I used to live in the Triangle.
I will tell you, and I probably will get a lot of Facebook messages and emails about this, but I'm not a Southerner at heart. I spent too many years in Atlanta with too many people from so many parts of the country, and I don't do sweet tea.
Is there such a thing as anything but sweet tea? I didn't know there was. I mean, I thought that's the only way it came was sweet.
In Ohio, there is such a thing, Michael, but you don't need to know about our foreign customs up here. You go on with what you do.
I've been to Chicago. I've been to New York City, and you're right. Unless you specific and D.C. a lot of different areas of the country, and she's absolutely right. If you walk into a restaurant, you better say sweet tea or bring me some sugar if you want it sweet. Period.
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, because I traveled with my family and my children,
you made
the mistake of ordering tea, assuming it would be sweet, and I think they kind of both spit it out. They were.
Yeah, those are all the states that Ron.
Hey, well, listen. We've got a leader from Colorado on. I'd like to bring on real quick, but let me just give her about 30 seconds of this, okay? I wonder what it's like to be the Jennifer Warhawk from Colorado, our state leader.
Hi, Jennifer.
Jennifer. Hi, how are you?
Hi, it's Debbie Bailey.
Hey, good to talk to you again. How's everything going?
Great.
Did I hear that you're an Alabama girl who is not a Southerner at heart?
I know.
I knew I was going to catch it.
You better be careful how loud you say that. Those Alabama people kick you out of there.
You know what? They have a hard time kicking me out of wherever I want to be. That's all I got to say.
Listen to that. She's got a drop like that, and she says that she's not a Southerner?
know.
Oh, come on
right
now.
Something's not adding up here. I don't know what it is, but something's not adding up.
Well, Michael, let me go ahead and introduce everybody to everybody. Well, not everybody, but some people to other people. Jennifer is one of the leaders in the grassroots. She is an administrator on the Team Santorum Facebook page, along with Shelley Allersbyer. And, you know, really is kind of a leader to a bunch of us and all of us. And then we do also have on the phone Javen Browder, who you may well know, Jennifer. He's one of the South Carolina grassroots and is also on Team Santorum. But also one of his associates, Stephen Brown, is on with us. He's our special guest in hour two, stuck around with us to talk about conservatism, about the delegates and all of that. And he's an attorney in Greenville. And it's definitely been very involved with conservatism. He did support Reagan in 76 and also went to the national conventions for the GOP in 96 and 2000. And he's working there in South Carolina to try to get closed primaries there, which they don't have now. So there's a little bit of a recap for everybody.
Right. We don't have that in Alabama either. I think that's a travesty.
So go ahead, Jennifer, with whatever you'd like to say.
Well, I'm just calling in just to say hey and just give you an idea. Yesterday, I spent half my day at the Colorado Assembly, one of the El Paso County Colorado Assembly, and El Paso County here in Colorado went quite heavily for Rick Santorum because we are smart people here in El Paso County, and there's only just a few people who aren't very smart who went for the other candidates, but you know, you can't have 100% smart people in any town. You gotta have your village idiots somewhere. I didn't mean to say that out loud. I'm sorry. Some things should really stay in my head. But
she's not gonna be nice today. I can tell already.
Warhawk, you and I think a lot alike. You know, I'm told at work every day, Michael, thought mouth.
Well, they don't call me Mad Jen for nothing, you know. So,
there you go.
You know, but so you know, yesterday was pretty nice. It got me kind of pumped up and fired up to realize, you know, just a reminder that I'm amongst friends here in Colorado, and I just hope that we could push the momentum on to the rest of the nation, so that from here on out, all we see is Rick Santorum wins from all the way to. Tampa. That would be nice.
It wouldn't it?
Yeah. I don't know if we can get California on board with that game plan, but we're going to do the best we can with that anyway.
I tell you what, we have some good folks out in California. I have several in my group, a lot actually in my group from California that I've thrown over to Louise and Millington at the state grassroots there because they had asked me. I get questions, guys, that I can't answer, but this luckily is something I could help them with. You know, I want to help. What can I do? And I send those people to the state coordinators and let them put them to work, and I've had several, more than you would imagine, in California. So
yeah, well, you know, the people who aren't congregated right there in the cities, you know, I have a couple of friends out there in California too who are good solid conservatives, and they feel like they're a dying breed out there, but nonetheless, they are out there. They're just usually out in the more country, the more rural areas, and we just need to get them to go into the cities and start trying to smarten the people up out there, get rid of some of those Hollywood. Actors, and maybe we could catch a fire out there somehow.
Right.
It wasn't just a few weeks ago since Rick was actually leading in the polls. I think it was not too long after his big surge in his first sweep of those three states. So it's doable.
Right.
And we got to remember, it's not a general election. It's a Republican primary, and there are, like you say, a lot of good conservatives. I've heard a faction out there that actually want to break, you know, South, and it probably never happened, but South California off, because the southern end of California is a lot more conservative than the northern end. So fire up that base and you know, get them out there. It's doable. At least if he can have a respectable showing, you know, it'll say, it's, I guess, winner take all. But
it is winner take all. But it's also a closed primary in California, so it's only
very
the Republican
point.
Vote. You don't have to worry about the other moderate political.
It's a winner take all based on the winner take all in each county. So it's not just whoever wins the whole state. It's whoever wins each individual county. They do winner-take-all in each individual county, and then they figure out who wins winner take all of who wins the most counties. So yeah. it's not quite an exact winner take all.
Okay.
It's kind of like some weird hybrid. But it can happen, absolutely.
Right.
Well, that's appropriate for California, a weird hybrid.
Yeah. And you know what? Being from Colorado, you know, we have a lot of California transplants out here. And let me tell you, it wreaks havoc on us because, you know, we have a lot of stuff called snow and ice out here and stuff that, you know, the California people don't really know much about. And, boy, do they sure cause us some problems in the wintertime.
Oh, my gosh. That's crazy. Yeah, I can imagine how that would be. I may well be out your way not too long from now, Jennifer. I did get a job just a few weeks ago, and I'm going to be out in the West somewhere. I don't know specifically where, but I'm hoping my fingers are crossed. I do have some family in Colorado, so that's a possibility of one of the places. So,
where in Colorado?
No idea. It's a group. It's an organization that's just kind of getting put together. So they don't even have that yet, where the office is. But you know,
we'll tell them that Colorado Springs is the greatest city in this entire state, and they would never find a happier place to put a new organization than in this city. So if you have any influence in that, tell them. Colorado Springs would welcome them.
Well, wonderful. I will definitely put it in. I'll get back with you on that and that you give me more details maybe at some point.
Well, I've been to Colorado one time, and it was Crippled Creek. Flew into Colorado Springs.
Oh, wow. I know why that is.
Drove,
that's where my aunt lives. My aunt lives in Cripple Creek.
Yeah, my wife and I drove to down on Cripple Creek. They told
Cripple
me.
Creek
yep,
is cool.
There
it's a very cool place. It's a casino.
I was at the casino, walked by, dropped a quarter into the end cap slot machine, and won, I don't know, what was it, babe, 150, 200, 250.
Wow. So you need to come back to Colorado. We'll go to Cripple Creek, and I'll definitely walk around next to you all the time and ask which machines to put the coins in.
I'm a Texas Hold'em player, so...
Steven and Javen might agree with me. You hit the end caps, whether it's in Vegas, Cripple Creek, Atlantic City, whether it's in Bossier, wherever. Hit the end caps because those are the ones the people walk by and slip a quarter into and then keep walking.
Oh, okay.
So
I'll
hit the end caps, and those are the ones that win the most. But, hey, listen, guys, we need to do we're down to about 18 minutes. And I need 5 minutes at the end of the show to wrap up, so we got about 10, 13 minutes. So I need to do closing remarks from everybody on the round table. We'll start with you, Debbie, and then Brenda, then Javen, then Jennifer, then Steven, and then Becca, and then myself. So, Debbie, by the way, before we go into that, since I've got two state leaders on, and I do this show. I don't do it as a state leader. I just want to make that clear. But I am a state leader here in Texas. Had a brainstorm. It is opening season for Little League. I was out there yesterday in my Santorum T-shirt, and I was approached by everybody that you can imagine with thumbs up saying, I hope he wins. Now, that's par for course in Texas. I will be out next Saturday with what Debbie has sent me, as well as some push cards for the guy that I'm pulling for District 93 here in Texas. We fell under redistricting, so we've got to open a new seat. Matt Krause is the guy I'm going for. So I will be at Little League every Saturday wearing a Santorum T-shirt with push cards in hand. So for you fellow state leaders, and Becca, you're a state leader up in Ohio, Steven and Javen, I believe you guys are state leaders. Well, I think we're all state leaders.
I'm just a county captain, but you know,
you're still a state leader. So,
all right.
This is a good way to touch people in a way that is America. I mean, the only thing I could probably do even better is to go out with a dozen apple pies. What do you think, Steven?
Oh, I think you got that right. I agree with you. Hey, look, while you guys were chatting about some of those things, I went online and was looking at this these polls in California to follow up the thought that we had there with the closed primary. The latest polls are showing Romney substantially ahead, but there's an LA Times USC poll showing Romney up by 19 points, but it shows Gingrich getting 12%. So
So if you move that Gingrich point over, that would show that would have it down to a 7-point lead. In the Gallup tracking poll, it's showing Romney up at 15 points in California. The Gingrich is getting 13%. And that goes to the point I was making earlier that there's no way that Gingrich can really justify what he's saying. Gingrich being in the race helps Romney because it's dividing up that vote. And in a winner-take-all state like California, we can't do that. We've got to get all the conservatives on the same page.
Absolutely.
Where's that from? Where's that from that you just read?
I'm looking at two different polls. I'm actually looking at the Clear Politics
okay.
average.
Go ahead.
But within that average,
gotcha.
They're showing the LA Times poll and then the Gallup tracking poll. And in both instances, Romney's up in double digits, but Gingrich is grabbing 12 and 13% of the vote. And, you know, I can't expect to move every single vote. If Gingrich drops out, it doesn't go 100% to Santorum, but honestly,
goodness,
it probably goes 90%. It probably does.
Mm-hmm. Right. And I've always said that those polls, I've said this before, those polls are somewhat reflective, but not completely reflective of what will happen. I said that when the polls in Alabama came out, and that's because you have the elderly people and the people that aren't computer savvy that don't just sit on the computer and do polls all day.
Yeah,
but
I absolutely
in the
agree
end,
with you.
They will go to the poll and vote.
Right.
So,
I think the poll is a rule of thumb, and the main point I'm trying to make is that we should not be writing off California. California is one.
Absolutely.
If Gingrich is not pulling our votes and it turns out the right way, California could still be winnable. Because as Javen said, Santorum was up in those polls some weeks ago, but there's lots of states where he's been up in the poll and he ended up, you know, not doing as well when the vote came out because of
right.
the way it impacts nationally with the media. But
what?
It's still a winnable deal.
What we'll be curious to see is with the defining win we had yesterday, how that affects people's thoughts going into the primaries for the rest of this month. Real quickly, while Brenda's still on the line, did everybody
yeah, bring
see,
her on?
Did everybody see the doctors? I forget what it is. Doctors for Repealing Obamacare.org or whatever it is. Did y'all see the new ad from them where they have Obama pushing Granny off the cliff? I thought it was
no.
awesome.
Oh,
we
wow.
got it.
Oh, haven't seen
we got
it.
It's freaking awesome, and we could use it against Romney, really, as far as I'm concerned.
Exactly.
Let's go ahead and let Brenda have her 5 minutes and then or a few minutes here, and then we'll go through everybody because we don't want to run out of time here.
Guys, I'm going to let you go. I'm going to let Brenda, I know she's just coming on. I just want to say keep doing what you're doing. Keep getting the info out there. Your county captains are so important and your volunteers and utilizing them in the right way and getting them the right materials. And anyone, everybody knows me on Facebook, you can personal message me your email address and I will get you position-based documents that you can utilize in your state. So I'm going to go and let Brenda have some time. I'm going to drop off, and you guys all have a great evening, okay?
Thanks,
great.
Brenda.
Thank you so much. Thank
all
you
right.
so much, Debbie, for calling
yep.
in.
Okay, you're welcome. Bye.
Have a great night.
You too.
Okay, guys. I just have a few things to say. First of all, with these delegates, I think Stephen, most of us have no idea about this delegate thing because it's never been an issue for us in the past. In Louisiana, they are having trouble filling their delegate slates. There is a plea going out because people don't understand how important this is. So we need to be getting that information out to as many people as we can because the average everyday voter, we don't understand this. I know, and I got a call tomorrow because they say we don't have a full slate of delegates here in our county, in Allen County, one of the biggest counties in the state of Indiana, because it's never been an issue before. So I got to call and see if I can. They'll put me on after the election. You have to actually be elected, but if there's not enough delegates, they'll nominate you after the voting takes place on May 8th. So I need to call and do that. But you know,
it's
I'm
so
not
important
sure
that we have people in each state. It's important we have people in each state that know how to do this because, and I mean, obviously I do know how to do it in South Carolina, but the state rules in South Carolina are very different from the rules in Louisiana or Indiana or various other places. And it's so critical that we do it on a state-by-state basis to make sure that we get all of the full of delegates, the full delegate allotment. It's critical.
Right.
Absolutely.
And so that's an issue we need to look at. And also we need to look at this because Romney hits each state he goes into with a – He outspends Rick about 50-1 in the cities, and he makes robocalls. People in Illinois, I was in Illinois for 3 days, they were getting robocalls, like two a day or more, from Romney that are all negative against Rick. There's nothing positive about Romney in this calls. And then we would call them, and people would be mad because it makes them mad. It turns them off. And some of them actually said they would probably vote for Obama because of these phone calls they were getting. So what we need to do, particularly like in states like California where we have a chance, we need to be getting the, you know, this, and I know we have ground game there, but they really need to be pushing it as much as we can to get our ground team organized and getting the message out to people before Romney hits the airways. So that they have the facts and they have the truth, because once you have the facts and the truth, you're not going to flip over to Romney. So that's another big thing in these states. We need to stop just looking at the next state, although we do need to be calling from home, Becca, and all these people doing that. And I was actually calling from the office in Illinois. But we need to do that to get the vote out. But we also have to focus on getting the message out beforehand, because that's the only way Rick does, because he doesn't have the money that Romney does. So it's really, really up to the volunteers. And the volunteers are doing a great job, because obviously with a 49% win in Louisiana, awesome. You know, you just can't. 9% higher than the polls that were coming out of Rasmussen the day before. So, you know, Rick really has an opportunity. So,
thank you so much, Brenda. That's important, that you said.
Yeah.
I wish I could remember it all, write it down. But email it to me. Will you? But Jennifer, if we can get some words from you, Jennifer, it's just like a minute and a half or so, just some ideas that you have or just something to sum up would be great.
Okay. Well, for one thing, I think Debbie said she dropped off, but she still owes me her information, so I'll just have to get with her again. But
I'll get it
also,
to you.
I'll
get it to you. Don't worry. I have her.
Okay.
I'll be able to. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But I also wanted to say something real quick about something that came up here in Colorado from some of my volunteers. What's really important in states, especially states like California and Texas and all of those, is if you are bilingual at all, if you speak Spanish, it would be really helpful if you could go out to the Spanish-speaking community and try to educate them about who Rick Santorum is, because from what I'm being told, I don't speak Spanish, so I don't know, that the Univision channel really sends out a lot of negative propaganda against Republicans. And so the Spanish-speaking people really have no real way of knowing what's true and what's not. So if you are a person who speaks, you know, Spanish, I would highly encourage you to try to get out to some of these multilingual or, you know, non-English-speaking voters who are hopefully legitimate and hopefully are citizens and just haven't learned language yet for whatever reason. So that's just one thing I wanted to point out that became an issue here in Colorado.
No, actually, Jennifer, that's a very important thing. And, in fact, I have not mentioned to anybody, I have been actually working the details through my head, and I've got to find the person that's willing to step up and do it. But I've got a few nights a week left on my banner, and I've actually been considering toying around with trying to find a conservative Latino who would like to do a radio show. So let's put the word out.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. I would love to do a Spanish-speaking show. I've got a few days left a week. I'm thinking I've got some ideas that I just need to approach of some folks in Florida.
Well, I have friends here that are Spanish-speaking and are really wanting to help Santorum out with that community. So I will put the word out to them to see what they think, and maybe they could help you out with that.
Well, give them my Conservative Nation Radio Shows at gmail.com if they like to talk. And they want, and any one of my, I produce 5 shows, including mine. Becca, Brenda, who was just, Brenda, let me put her back on live. Brenda will tell you, I say, here's your 3 hours a week, fly, and you never hear from me again. Is that not correct, Brenda?
Absolutely correct. And Michael's wonderful because he just lets you do your own thing, and it's fun, and it's a great way to get a message out, so.
Yeah. So we just got one more minute left, so let's hear from Javen real quick. That was a great point, Jennifer, and I did hear from several people when I was calling Missouri. that they were concerned about Univision and how it was affecting their community and affecting themselves personally, and they said that the truth needed to get out, and I wrote that right in the comments to the campaign, so hopefully the other people did as well. But we're going to go ahead and get Javen your last, say, minute or so, minute and a half.
Okay, yeah, I'm just to remind you, look, there's something special happening here. I met Rick way early on in the spring, and although and just felt something special, and although I did, you know, support Michelle Bachmann until she dropped out of the race, you know, I kept telling people all along, I said, look, Rick Santorum's a great guy, and I said, don't count him out of the race. I said, there's something there. I said, he's in this to win, even when he's at 2% or whatever. I said, you know, one of these people is going to come out of Iowa, one of these people is going to emerge as the conservative candidate, and there's just something very special, and now that I've been involved, you know, with the Santorum campaign, you know, since Iowa, and just meeting these people and just seeing, you know, being around Rick Moore and just seeing him speak, and there's just something that's there, you know, and the establishment is trying hard. I mean, they've gone a long way to make this thing a done deal, and, you know, we're certainly fighting a huge uphill battle. And but I don't know, there's something in my gut that just tells me at the end of the day that that Rick Santorum is being raised up for something special here. And I really think we can. I think we will win. But it's going to take everything all of us have. You know, we've got to spend the hours on the social media. We've got to keep the positives up. We've got to expose Romney, you know, do it in a gracious way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we just got to keep hammering away. And one thing I've noticed for a long time, I didn't notice Romney people were on social media. They were just pretty quiet, but they've really gotten to be very keyed up lately. I think it's because they're afraid. I think it really is. You know, they're trying to play this inevitability thing, but it's done in a very a way you can almost tell when people are kind of like the new people there for a long time, and still, you know, they feel backed into a corner, so they come out attacking. But I think that's a good sign. I think it shows that they're still afraid of us, and there's still a chance. And I think we can, and I think we will win this thing at the end of the day. I really do. You know, I have a lot of hope. And if not, we're fighting the good fight. We're going to go down fighting. And I just want to encourage people to keep that up. Let it be a part of it.
All right.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much. Thank you, Javen. And I agree with that. Somebody that I had talked to that knows Rick Santorum, they said, and I think this just it speaks to what you just said, that he has the touch. I think that's all you really have to say, isn't it?
Yep, absolutely. Well, Becca, this is Michael. Your closing thoughts real quickly, and we got to wrap it up, buddy. It's the fastest 3 hours of any Sunday.
It really is, and I want to thank everyone who was on the show, Adam Teckle. I want to thank Stephen Brown. I want to thank Javen, I want to thank Brenda. I want to thank you, Michael Smith. I want to thank Jennifer Warhawk. I want to thank anyone else that called and everyone that listened. You're all great patriots, and you're going to help us all save this country. And whether it's Rick Santorum or you know, if it's down the road, God bless you. God bless you all.
All right, buddy. Well, I'm going to wrap up with a quote from, believe it or not, from 143 B.C., from a Roman statesman by the name of Marcus Tullius Cicero. And it works so well within regards to what we were just speaking about with Governor Romney. A nation can survive its fools and even the ambitious, but it cannot survive treason from within. An enemy at the gates is less formidable, for he is known and carries his banner openly. But the traitor moves amongst those within the gate freely, his sly whispers rustling through the alleys, heard in the very halls of government itself, for the traitor appears not a traitor. He speaks in accents familiar to his victims, and he wears their face and their arguments. He appeals to the baseness that lies deep in the hearts of all men. He rots the soul of a nation. He works secretly and unknown in the night to undermine the pillars of a city. He infects the body politic so that it cannot no longer resist. A murderer is less to fear. The traitor is the plague. This is Better Days from the Maley Thomas Band of Dallas, Texas, written for Senator Santorum. God bless, patriots.
Some people have lost their faith, no longer think our country's great. I choose to believe in it still. We'll find our way as we find our will. Found it in faith, our God bless. For life and liberty. Some people have lost their faith, no longer think our country's great. I choose to believe in it still.